the things I see. The path that I have chosen now has led me to a wall.
I think, look, they can hear me, but I can't hear them.
I feel a little more like something dear was lost. It rises now before me, the dark and silent barrier. Past beyond is what I seek. I fear that I may be too weak, and those of you who've seen it too, to glimpse the other side. The promised land is waiting, like a maiden that is soon to be a bride. The moment is a masterpiece, the weight of indecision's in the
everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 25th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, for which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Excuse me. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scriptures from last week, and I'm reading out of the book of Romans.
We're reading in the book of Romans, chapter 6. What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. How shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? Know ye not that so many of us as were baptized unto Jesus Christ were baptized unto his death? Therefore we are buried with him by baptism unto death, that like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. For if we have been planted together in likeness of his death, shall we not be in the likeness of his resurrection? Knowing this, that the old man is crucified with him, that the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin, for he that is dead is freed from sin. Now if we be dead with Christ, we believe that we shall also live with him, knowing that Christ, being raised from the dead, dieth no more. Death hath no more dominion over him. For in that he died unto sin once, but in that he liveth unto God. Likewise, reckon ye also yourselves to be dead indeed unto sin, but alive unto God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, that ye should obey it in the lust thereof. Neither yield ye your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourself unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. For sin shall not have dominion over you, for ye are not under the law, but under grace. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under the law, but under grace? God forbid. Know ye not that to whom you yield yourself servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death, or to obedience unto righteousness? But God be thanked that ye were the servants of sin, but ye have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered you. Being then made free from sin, ye became the servants of righteousness. I speak after the manner of men, because of the infirmity of your flesh. For as ye have yielded your members servants to uncleanness and to iniquity, unto iniquity, even so now yield your members servants of righteousness unto holiness. For when ye were the servants of sin, ye were free from righteousness. What fruit hath ye then in those things whereof ye are now ashamed? For the end of those things is death. But now being made free from sin and become the servants to God, ye have your fruit unto holiness, and the end everlasting life. For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. That was Romans chapter 6.
Okay, tonight we don't have a particular subject in focus, and we don't have anything particular to read. Maybe next week we'll see where we pick up on something new. So we'll go right into if there are any questions that were sent in or in the announcements to be made. Jan?
Announcements we don't have. We have plenty of questions.
All right, well, we'll take a little time answering some of these questions.
Okay. Let me pull them up here. What is the procedure for the recall of a governor? In Illinois, I believe this is currently happening behind the scenes.
Well, first of all, there is a very specific procedure, and you have to get a percentage of the votes that was cast for the last governor race. So let's say it was 100,000. I forget what the percentage is. I'll see if I can look it up maybe a little later. When I pass things over to Gerard, I'll go see if I can find it and be more specific. But there is a certain number. And in order to take a governor and to get rid of a governor, to have what's called recall, it has to balance out throughout the state. In other words, you can't get signatures of people obviously outside of the state. You can't get signatures from just the southern part or the northern part or the eastern part of the state. It has to be reasonably a certain percentage of the state has to have so many recalls. So it has to be run in a petition, a physical petition. Putting something online and trying to get signatures online is not going to do it. It's not it's not the way that it's set up to be done. So it has to be done by the people within their state, and they have to run petitions to remove the recall the governor. What I'll do, let me think about this a minute. The recall process, I'm wondering if I have it up there already. Let me take a quick look. I'm going to put the recall process up here underneath the people's duty. I know I've got something written up on it. I've done some, studying, looking for that particular process. And the same thing with removing other people from office. It's near very, very difficult to try to remove a president that way, although I would imagine a president could be recalled, but it would be a heck of a job to do that. A lot of work, a lot of people involved, and I guess if that much work was performed and that many people were involved, then it would be accepted as a recall. But the important thing is you have to get the people within the election district. For instance, if you wanted to remove a congressman, a U.S. congressman, or a U.S. senator, or even a state senator, you have to get X amount, a percentage of the signatures of people in accordance to the number of votes that took place in the last election. So that's true in all particular offices. But again, it must be within the district. And the election district, that is, and or subdivision, if you want to call them, the elected subdivision, and spread out particularly throughout the state if it's a statewide thing, and obviously throughout all the states if it was a national thing. And the only national election ultimately is the president anyway, but that would be pretty difficult. All right, next question. Again, like I said, I'll post it, and I'll probably put up here under people's duty, I'll probably name it, recall, something with the word recall in it, and it'll have its own tab, and it'll be just on recall. Okay, next question.
I was going to say, that's why it's easier to do an indictment, because they're all criminals.
That's right, yeah. Would be.
Okay, and this one was a question for Brent. Should we save that till he's on, or?
Save it to when he comes on. You can pose that question at that time.
Is NLA taking any intake forms now due to the alleged crisis going on currently?
Yes, we are taking paper intakes. Look at the courts never close. Never. They're open 24/7, 365 days a year. They're open on Christmas. Now, that doesn't mean people are in the building or doing anything in particular, but there is a judge always on call in every courthouse and can be woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever for a situation that deems it to be an emergency. So they're never really closed. What was the question again?
Is NLA taking any intake forms now?
Oh, okay, right, taking the forms. All right, yeah, so we are still taking papers, and we are filing. As a matter of fact, we've got about, goodness, quite a few, about 15 or so, roughly, decisions and orders that will be going out this week. Trying to get them out today, but today's a holiday, so couldn't mail them anyway. So, but I also will be working on them tomorrow, so there's about 15 of them. And we did two or so habeas corpuses last week. We've done some other decisions and other papers. So, yeah, we're filing, and we're filing all the time.
And we're social distancing because we're over the computer, so we're really compliant.
Right, I'm one computer away from your own.
Okay, next question. I have this question. I am seeking employment and cannot in good conscience go along with the lies. I do not wish to file a W-4, nor do I wish to contribute 1 cent of fake money to their schemes. If I am refused employment for not complying with their hiring policies, after first attempting to educate verbally, and in writing, of course, does that then make them liable to recourse? And if so, what do I need to know as far as who to contact, what to do, and so forth?
Well, yeah, you could take a legal recourse. Not that it's going to benefit you with this corrupt court. Of course, that's why we opened up our court of record, to try to do what we can. A lot is not respected or responded to, but we do know it's there. It's done lawfully. It's been filed. All our papers have been filed, and we're waiting to get onto the other side. Once we get to the other side, meaning being that the deep state is completely removed and the judges have no place to hide anymore, no rock to go under, no protection, and no reason to maintain the status quo anymore. And then at that point, that's when justice will return to the courts, but only if we, the people, take the courts back. And that's what we're working on doing, is to take the courts back. Now, it is possible to file a paper and win a case if you can get a good judge, because we do hear that Trump has put in quite a few judges. So
there is precedent. There is a case that was precedent, and I don't know why everybody didn't just follow up on it, unless they've changed the rules. There was a kid that was he wasn't a citizen. I think he was an illegal immigrant from Mexico, and he got a job working at, I thought it was Taco Bell, and he was there for a couple of years, and then he made manager, and they wanted him to run a store, but then somebody figured out that his social security number was no good, and they fired him, and he got a lawyer, and the lawyer sued Taco Bell, and what they did was they called the IRS in as a witness to the hearing, and the IRS said, we didn't tell you should fire him. We told you that you should ask him to fill out a W-4 or whatever and get his social security number, but we didn't tell you, if he didn't have one, that you couldn't hire him or that you could fire him. So they ended up giving this guy a year's salary just to get out of it, to pay him off, you know. So the IRS is not going to tell, look, it's a voluntary system, and they're not going to stick up for the employer that doesn't hire somebody because he refuses to give a social security number, which that's your absolute right. Of course, that's not a good way to get a job, by suing the place you want to work for, unless you're going for the gusto, you know, you think you're going to get that money and not have to work again. But there are cases out there, and I don't know, you know, when the last one was, but you remember hearing about that Taco Bell case, don't you, John?
No, I don't recall that. No.
Oh, well, that was one that was out there that, you know, that it was the issue of him not having a social security number and not filling out the W-4, and he won the case. So I don't know what the particular. I mean, if you could find that case, and you feel you know real froggy and you want to jump, I would mention that case in your case, you know. So just if you can find it, you know, I don't know how you could find it or whatever, but it is out there, and I did hear about it. So
okay,
all right,
next question.
Okay, is it a violation of the separation of powers clause of the U.S. Constitution when county child support enforcement agencies run by the executive branch, continues to refuse to provide me a child support review, claiming the agency can't hold a review due to pending action, referring to the juvenile court's child support hearing to be held on April 2020, which didn't happen due to closures. Juvenile court sent me a notice in the postal mail, a rescheduled date for juvenile court to hold child support review on June 17th, 2020, but that's the end of that.
Okay, can you read the first part of that again?
Is it a violation of the separation of powers clause of the Constitution when county child support enforcement agencies, which are run by the executive branch, continue to refuse to provide me a child support review,
And I'm not aware that that is run by the, well, let me think about that, the executive branch, I guess, too, it does have some, I don't understand the question really on how they, you know, a separation of powers, because you're talking about an executive, which is the governor in the case of a state, then you're looking at a county. Read that question again. Let me think about that, how the county would run and how it would be some kind of a conflict or something. Go ahead.
Is it a violation of the separation of powers clause of the Constitution when county child support or enforcement agency, which it thinks is run by the executive branch, has a question mark there, continues to refuse to provide me a child support review, claiming the agency can't
Let's pull back. I think I kind of understand. First of all, that's a judicial process. And I know here in New York, for instance, it is mentioned that the family court is part of the court system. And it is considered, believe it or not, in New York here, that it's a court of record. That's a joke, of course. But it is supposed to be a court of record according to New York state law, the Constitution. And being in a county, you know, it's really collective. It's a statewide thing, but it's county controlled, just like the courts are statewide, but it's every county has a court, which would, you know, people can go to for their state court. We here in New York call it the Supreme Court, and then there's an appellate process to it, an appeals court and appellate process. And that, of course, is separate from courts of record, which are operate in the same, supposed to be operating in the same building. But going back to it being something with a separation of powers, I don't see the problem with anything in the way the question was asked, that separation of powers could be even considered. Is there any other part to that question other than that part of the question?
It sounds to me like he should rest more on due process violations.
Well, that is clearly it. Due process is clearly the way to go. And family courts have got to go because they're all operating unlawfully. And they shouldn't be operated. Of course, if you have some kind of a family process, a system set up, or court system set up, it should be run by the people themselves. It should not be run by any elected individual, an appointed individual, nor should it be run by anybody that's a lawyer that's going to be bringing in you know, codes and statutes into play. And its true purpose is really to repair the family, to repair things, and not to destroy it, and separate the children from parents, and parent from parent, and so on and so forth. So it's really a mess, and that is something we need to consider, and we'll probably propose something. Well, we definitely will propose a plan that maybe can go nationwide. The people have got to adopt it and exercise it. But we can't do that until we take the courts back. And then as you take the courts back, then you can deal with the family court problems. We should be able to, without a problem, shut them down. There's nothing more unconstitutional, in my opinion, than family court systems.
Aren't the family court judges appointed? I don't think they're elected, as far as I know. I think they're appointed.
Well, you'll find that a lot of some of them are just administrative judges. That's a possibility in some places. I know in New York, often you'll find that judges that are sitting on the bench for the Supreme Court, the New York State Supreme Court, also will sit in there. And now, they may not be elected per se, but they may have been appointed by the elected judge. You see?
Yeah, because
and
I don't
so,
ever recall seeing a sign for Judge so-and-so for family court.
They wouldn't run for family court. They'd run for state court, which is within their counties. And then, of course, they'd be also taking a seat. If it's a small county, that particular judge might sit on county court, the state court, and the family court. But again, you know, I doubt any counties. Well, look, I guess there are counties that could be that small that more than one person. Well, you figure you'd need at least two judges, you know, at least two of them. But he gets to a point, I'm sure, as many as he needs. I don't know how that process works, and I'm sure they do whatever they please with that also. But again, one judge is usually elected, and other judges are appointed.
That reminds me of Andy Mayberry, RFD, when the guy comes in, he wants a different department. The guy reaches under the bench, takes the hat out, puts it on. You know?
Absolutely.
He had like dog catcher, judge, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, it was pretty funny. But it does, in them small towns, they probably, you know, it wasn't just a joke. They probably did that.
But most places that are reasonably populated, again, you'll have that one judge, and the others are really appointed judges. They're actors, the actors and jesters. Anyway, did we answer that question? Is there a second part to that? Or is that it?
No, there was no second. Okay, next question. This is a long one. Today I was scammed by an out-of-state kangaroo court in Florida. I'm in Massachusetts. That awarded a plaintiff $1.4 million in a defamation lawsuit despite having no jurisdiction. The plaintiff did not even need to prove damages. His entire claim was false. I'm now forced to appeal the ruling to save my business from bankruptcy. I already invested endless hours over the last 1.5 years in this frivolous lawsuit. I'm appalled how the judge violated my rights. I learned from NLA material that a federal judge has immunity from his rulings except when he rules with a lack of jurisdiction. So I want to learn how to hold him accountable and sue the state and him personally for damages. His case number is blah, 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 blah. Is there a forum or chat room?
Was that a federal case he's talking about? Because he's talking about a federal judge.
You can't tell from the...
Because, I mean, you know, look at federal courts. They're very limited in their jurisdiction to begin with. And it must be a constitutional issue in order for a federal court to be involved. And that's why when you send a case, when you take a case and move it to the federal court, you're moving it for cause. And that cause has got to show a constitutional cause. In our case, it's usually a denial of due process, some assault upon one of our unalienable rights that's usually protected by the Bill of Rights. So, first of all, I can guarantee you the court didn't have jurisdiction to begin with because they're civil law courts. Just ask them, are they running under civil law? Especially in the federal court, you can ask them, are you applying a Rule 2 here? Are you running under civil law? And if they say they are, and they will say they are, even the state is running under civil law, then they don't have any jurisdiction over you, and you're being hijacked into jurisdictions unknown. You can deny their jurisdiction, move it to federal court for cause, and battle it at that level. Now, it's difficult to win on the federal level, but again, if you have a strong case and the judge feels intimidated by your knowledge and your position of what you're bringing before them, you could beat it. But if the judge feels, you know, you really don't know what you're doing and he can feel comfortable to hang his hat on a nail that's not there, so to speak, then he's going to do that too, most likely. Unless you find a just judge, but that's like an oxymoron to find a just judge these days.
It sounds like they did a summary judgment because they didn't have a trial. Who decided that the judge could decide?
Well, right there is another problem. But again, you know, first of all, they're in a civil court. But yeah, they should have a jury, and if there was no jury trial, but they could forego the jury. You know, if the process goes that if you're being sued, and the process moves forward, and you don't stop the process. By denying them, you know, if it's worth $20 or more, you have a right to a trial by jury. Otherwise, if you don't do something to stop the case from going forward, then you're finding yourself in a court. It's not even a court of record, of course, because there's no trial jury, and you're accepting the decision of a judge, so you're acquiescing. But you can always discover, even after the case, it doesn't matter when you discover it, that you've been hijacked to jurisdictions unknown because you weren't even in a true equity court where they had the power, the authority to go through a process, maybe contractual situation. Does it say what kind of case it was?
No.
It says an anti-defamation case.
Yeah, it was a defamation.
And the guy has a business. He sued his business, whatever that might be.
Yeah, you can look at this number of things you could do. There's an appellate process, a court and a court of appeals. So there's two processes within a state that you can appeal it to, and then of course you could move it. The best thing to do is to move it to federal court for cause for denial of due process, and you win it on that end with a good wherefore clause. When you file on that case, you want a wherefore clause that the other court has to cease and desist. And you get a good wherefore clause in there, you know, if you're going to counter sue with some kind of damages.
I had an attorney tell me that, I mean, in their kangaroo court, this is a, you know, attorney that operates in there, that when you get a case like that where they just do summary judgment and they didn't, and they just, the judge just did it without a trial, you know, like they steamroll you, that he had a very easy time getting those cases overturned because it was a due process violation. You know, if you didn't agree that the judge could decide that both parties agree, and especially the one that's getting sued should have to agree, obviously, because he's the one that who's got to pay the money if he loses, right? So he thought that he had a very easy time overturning them, those summary judgment cases like that, like we're describing. I don't know how true that is, but that's what he claimed.
Yeah, I think you're over-modulating a little bit here or there. When you talk next time, try to back off maybe an extra inch from the mic or something and see how that goes. Okay, I guess that's it on that question. Any other?
Yeah, here's one that's similar to a previous one. I'm looking for work. I can no longer in good conscience agree to filing a W-4 for employment and understand that I shouldn't have to. I applied at Kelly's Services and explained this and asked that they accept a form in lieu of a W-4, which I will attach to this email. The response was smug and arrogant. We are a Fortune 500 company, blah, 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 blah. My question is, what might I consider doing, and can NLA offer me any guidance or assistance? Perhaps I should fill out their application and once hired provide them with what I would call form number 2, which I will also attach.
Well, I don't know. Again, I don't participate in those things myself, so I don't know too much about their part of the process as far as what you might be able to do or not do. I've heard of people who haven't had any money removed, and they put on a lot of dependents, and then at the end of the year, you know, I don't know what they do. I just don't know what they do with those things. But you could win a court case in a battle. I don't know. Today's environment will be difficult, but at some point in time, again, you could win a case. I think one of the things that we could look forward to is that the IRS is going to probably disappear within the next year or two. You know, President Trump has taken over the Treasury and pulled the not taken over the Treasury. He's already executive over the Treasury as it is anyway, but he has taken over the bank. And he has moved the Federal Reserve process. So I'm not sure exactly how I would even explain that, but he's taken control of their process and moved it into the Federal Reserve, into the actual Treasury. And so he's got total control at this point, and that's why the interest rates are down to practically nothing, and he's going to push it down into the negative, I think. What it seems that he's doing is he's driving the Federal Reserve into the ground. He's going to exhaust every penny he can get from them and then just leave them dry. They plan to injure us with all of that debt, and he's going to turn around and say, hey, that's not our debt. We're just taking back all the money you stole from us, and you know, and you go answer to the rest of the people and the other nations and so on and so forth concerning the debt. I think that's where he's heading to, and then he's going to move. You know, I heard that he's already built an economic system alongside the funny money one, the monopoly money, and he's put a gold and silver, maybe he's moved to silver certificates or something, maybe that's what he's going to do, but he's going to do something and eventually move it into a transition which won't be too harsh on the people that there'd be such a great loss. But look, he's rebuilt the military, he's going to be working on the infrastructure of the nation. And he's spending a lot of money. He did the oil line coming down from where was that, up Alaska, and a lot of different things. He's been spending money like crazy because he has no intentions on giving it back to them. They owe us more than what we can possibly draw out of them. And so I don't think definitely the IRS, which is not a government agency. And remember, Trump is moving to stand on the law. And that's the key. If he's going to stand on the law, then he's going to have to back up the people, especially when they go into the judicial process, with the fact that the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, is not registered as a federal agency. It just showed up as a federal agency. I think it was in either 71 or 73. It just showed up on the books. And there they were, and they become the collection agency. Now, the IRS is a collection agency, and it has a police force behind them, the ATF. They exercise that to the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. But on the other end, they got a new thing that they're doing. If they can't beat you, and that's where we've come to in a couple of places here, if they can't beat you, they make another plan and assault you from another direction. So now the collection agency for the Federal Reserve is now contracting another collection agency to come out after you for money. Now, they don't have the ability to put anyone in jail, but they do have the ability to try to seize and cause financial problems for individuals, for instance, destroying your credit and things of that nature. I'm in the middle of learning about that right now, so I'll let people know how that goes, if it's necessary. Because I tell you what, none of that, in my opinion, is going to be here in the next year or two. You know? So we'll see how that goes. All right, next question.
Okay, I looked up the House of Representatives Bill 6666, the TRACE bill. They're using Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution for grounds for the bill. How does that apply to this bill?
It's 666. I heard this before. What is this bill?
Well, it's supposed to be the bill where they can trace everybody, keep track of you, track you.
Yeah, look, we have to dismantle all that. And they're going to continue all of their, whatever they can. You know, look, the brakes are on, but it takes time for them to stop. You know, it's a ship out of control, and in order to stop that ship, it may take miles before that ship stops or that train stops and crashes in the case of a train or something. But, you know, it takes a while. So the deep state, being a big, big organization, is still in process and still moving. And a lot of their plans and different things that they've put together, you know, they're still in action and moving forward. Not until these people are taken down completely, where the head is completely cut off. In a sense, they have been cut off because, you know, a lot of these people are no longer in power. But they are behind the scenes still working and giving orders and doing things, and things are happening. At some point in time, when that is finally removed, then that whole system will collapse and we wouldn't have to worry about it no more, because it's not going to be there. Look, we know that the 16th Amendment doesn't say what they claim it says. We know that they cannot tax an income, they cannot tax your property. That's called a direct tax. That's all unlawful, unlawful in common law in itself, and it's also written into our Constitution. So they can't do those things once we get to the other side. And if they're going to be obedient to the law, then everything's going to be shut down on those, all those things. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. I think in a year or two, it's going to fix itself.
Okay. That's the last question that I have, John.
Oh, okay. I see Brent is here. Brent, you ready to go forward? I see he's muted. Brent, you're muted if you're talking.
Are you there?
Oh, there you go. We got you. Are you ready to go?
I'm echoing, aren't I?
We're hearing you now.
Well, okay, let me see if I can plug this in.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
I hope I don't
heard, they're hiring, I don't know how many, 100,000 or a million checking, tracking tracers, paying them $25 an hour to go around and do this tracking on the vaccines and the COVID disease and all that stuff. But once the word gets out that whole thing is unconstitutional, these governors that are putting it in or whoever's running it, every one of those tracers is also breaking the law because they're facilitating that unconstitutional version. And so if you got your hand in it, you can't say, I didn't know, I was just doing my job. They're hiring you to go do unconstitutional spying on people, and you're liable too. So when that suit goes through, every one of them tracking people is also liable. But if that word gets out, they won't be able to hire anybody because nobody's going to want to be liable for that. It's just a thought.
Right. And look, all of this is unlawful stuff. You know, there's those big places out west, big buildings on large acres of land that do nothing but just collect information. Every email you send out, every phone call you make, every conversation electronically you have anywhere, it's all recorded there. And when you become a person of interest, then they unmask you and then they look to see all these things. Now, that's all unlawful to begin with, okay? I mean, how can you be spying on the people before you even get the authority from a court? They'll call it unmasking, where the court has given you the authority to, you know, say, okay, you can go do this or do that, maybe listen into phone calls or have a warrant served of some kind, looking for something or whatever the case may be. So that, you know, that all has to stop. And there's nothing we could do about that right now. But when we get to the other side, again, this is only going to get fixed if the people take control of the courts. Because if we, the people, don't take control of the courts, who's going to control the courts? I'll tell you exactly who's going to continue to control the courts. It's going to be the bar attorneys who understand statutory law. And they have no knowledge of common law. And everything runs off statutes, regulations, if it's, you know, different for different things, and you know, off of codes, period. So until we take the courts back, or unless we take the courts back, we won't be able to fix any of those things. So we have to go to a common law process again, where the people are in control, where a judge has no say inside of a common law court, with the exception of moving things along as a traffic cop, which is really a magistrate. The judge is supposed to put his magistrate cap on at that point, if he's sitting in a courtroom where there's a jury, a trial jury, because the tribunal is the trial jury, and they are to be unadulterated. The opinions of the judges are relevant, and they need to understand that. And if they're going to interpret the law, if it's a situation where equity is involved because the individual was doing something commercially, or this was an agency situation, where they're in a court, maybe a criminal action going taking place, well, then obviously statutes will apply towards those people. But the jury must understand that they have the power and the authority to deny that those statutes just deny them. So, again, we have to take the courts back in order to accomplish the goals. So we have to... you know, get into the courts on a local level and ultimately be the administrators for the juries to make sure that they're not tainted and abused, and train the people up that's coming in for this process that they can nullify any law or any statute if statutes do apply in those cases. So, but unless that happens, we're not going to get rid of the rest of the problems. We're not going to be able to get rid of the family court. We're not going to be able to deal with the problems, all these other problems that we have, for instance, the collecting all this information and going through this quote-unquote unmasking process. And I think there's a lot of other things that we have to really think about. We should really do some brainstorming on that and make a list of things and consider what we could do to make them lawful, and what can we get rid of because it clearly is unlawful. So, but anyway, it's up to the people. If they want to fix this, they got to step up and do it. All right. Anything else, or is that it?
I guess that's it. Me, John.
Yeah. All right. And there's no announcements?
No.
All right. I don't know, are we still looking for district leaders? We broke the United States up into 10 districts, okay, and let's see, two West Coast, two Mountain, three Central, and one, two, three, four. Four broken into four parts on Eastern, and we're still looking, I think, for district leaders, aren't we?
Yes, John, we're looking for a district leader in District 5. Can you hear me?
Okay. District 5 is the Central.
District 5 is North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Nebraska.
Okay, so we need district leader there, or leaders. We can take more than one. But we, you know, even if people don't live in that that particular section, you know, they can take those positions. It's good to keep them in the central time zone, if possible. But again, you don't have to live in that area in order to take up a district position in that area. So, anyway, how many people do we have? Do we need just that one district?
That one district, and then all the district leaders are looking for state coordinators. So people who are interested in being a state coordinator for whatever state you live in, send me an email or send it to Jan.
Okay, so we're looking for at least 50 of those people. And we do have people that have signed up for that. We're calling those people up to kind of push them along, to reactivate them.
All the district leaders are going through those lists. That's their first assignment. So, yes, they're checking all of them.
All right. So all that we're doing is organizing the United States and every state right down into the county levels, and then educate the people who are taking positions on the county level particularly. But everyone should become educated on every level, and we should all be involved in our local level so that we do have government by consent of the people out of the grassroots level. Okay, with that, I'm going to pass the board over to Gerard. And let me introduce Brent. Brent Allen Winters. He is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law and other books. He wrote a booklet on militia, which, matter of fact, we made a course out of. You can take that course at National Liberty Alliance here. And so anyway, Brent's website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. Gerard, you got the board.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Gerard. I heard today, I don't remember, I think maybe I do remember who said this, that National Liberty Alliance has more educational materials on their website than any other patriot group available. If that's true, I know that they have a lot. National Liberty Alliance has a lot. And as much as, I would say, I've never measured it, but certainly there are things there that can be learned. Or as the British say, learnt. Go there and take advantage of it. This is all about learning. This is all about us folk understanding law. When our country began, one of the influential parliamentarians stood up in Parliament and said that in no country in the world is the study of law so prominent as it is in our American colonies. Now, at that time, our American colonies were trying to break away from England, so he called it a country, but he also said it's our American colonies, but the study of law was prevalent. Now, how prevalent was it in the colonies? Well, England at that time, I think, was about 8 million people. The colonies had about 3 million. According to the best figures we have. Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England, sometimes called commentaries on the common law, that's not the technical title, but that's what it was, 4 volumes, quoted more than any other legal authority in America from 1776 to 1890, 1895. Our courts quoted those 4 volumes more than any other authority, because we didn't have anything else here. We couldn't afford to ship books over, and as people tramped across the wilderness, they couldn't carry many books. They usually had a Bible in the English and Blackstone's commentaries. In fact, maybe an apocryphal story, but that's how Abe Lincoln got interested in law. Some will say that's too bad. Some will say that's good. But nonetheless, it's true that Blackstone's commentaries were the reason that he got interested, because he was trying to run a general store with another fellow that I think skinned him out of the money, and they ended up going bust. But immigrants would come through in wagons and they needed money, and they sold Lincoln and his partner 2 or 3 barrels that they had in their wagons they wanted to get rid of. They didn't know what was in them. It was a grab bag kind of a situation. They bought the barrels and whatever was in them for 50 cents. And Lincoln started cleaning the barrels out, and down at the bottom of one of the barrels, got his bony fingers down in there, and he felt some books, and he pulled them out, and sure enough, it was four volumes of Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England. And he began to read them. In fact, to read those four volumes would qualify you to practice law in Illinois at that time. How do I know? Well, because what you needed to practice law at that time was for another lawyer who was licensed to sign a piece of paper and recommend you for the practice of law. The story is that Lincoln was on the circuit in the 8th Judicial Circuit, and he spent all his time on the circuit. That's how he got well known. Never stayed at home. Of course, if he'd have stayed at home, it would have been an impossible situation because his wife was impossible to live with. That's the fact of the matter. That's why he stayed gone all the time. That's how he got popular. If it wasn't for her, he'd have never been popular. The Lord do work in strange and mysterious ways. But this fellow finally caught up with him that wanted to practice law. He was a young fellow. He finally caught up with Lincoln at a outpost of an inn where he'd been staying, and Lincoln was in his room and had a pan of water in front of him and was trying to shave. He'd go from courthouse to courthouse. The judicial district was vast. Just nothing but open prairie with a town every 20 miles or so, a little village where the county seat would be there, and he'd get legal business. He was shaving. And this young fellow finally caught up with him. He was an immigrant from Ireland. This is the way the story goes anyway. And he wanted Lincoln to sign this piece of paper that said to recommend him for the practice of law so he could have a license. There was no bar exam, just recommendation. And Lincoln says, "What have you read?" And he says, "I have red hairs on the back of my neck." He said, no, that's not what I mean. I mean, what books have you read?" And he said, "Well, I've read Blackstone's commentaries." And so Lincoln took his paper and wrote on the paper, "I recommend this young man for a license to practice law. He's a lot more intelligent than he looks. Signed, Abe Lincoln." Now, somebody's got that someplace, and I thought I saw a photograph of it. But that's what it took. But you had to have had Blackstone's commentaries under your proverbial belt, your mental belt, or you couldn't practice law. And more volumes of Blackstone's commentaries sold in the colonies, in the American colonies of England, of about 3 million people, far and away more sold here than sold among the Englishmen of 8 million people. And if you want to know how many were sold and who bought them and what publishers ordered them, in the United States, you can go to my book, Excellence of the Common Law, and I've got a section there that tells you all that information. I don't know why a fellow would take time to compile something like that. I suppose it fascinated me at the time. It fascinated me that Americans were so interested in the law. And if you're interested in the law, it will change your country. That doesn't mean you have to be an expert on the law. Like Sir John Fortescue said, every man doesn't have to be a theologian to be a Christian. He doesn't have to know how many angels could dance on the head of a pin, like the theologians, they talk about silly things like that. That's not what he has to know. What does he have to know? Well, he has to know the fundamentals, said Fortescue. Fortescue was a common lawyer from England in the 15th century, the 1400s. He has to know something about the common law. He has to know the first principles. That's what Blackstone says, too. Every man is responsible to know the first principles. Listen, you can't understand the Constitution of the United States. You can't. I don't care how many times you read it. You won't understand it unless you know the first principles of our common law, because our Constitution, for instance, is a brief of common law government. As Chief Justice Taft says, it's informed, every phrase, every word informed by our common law. Our common law informs our Constitution. It's a brief of common law government. And if you don't have the first principles of our common law is not a list of laws. You don't go learning a list of laws. No, our common law is a way of life. You learn that way of life. How do you learn it? You read about it. That's why early on they used to say if you wanted to be a lawyer in America, our common law country, you read law. You took time, a lot of time, and you just read law. Now, this is a suggestion. There are some books you can get to learn about the common law. You could get Blackstone's commentaries and read 3 pages a day every day, and it wouldn't be very long. You'd get through the whole thing, and some of it would bore you, but you'd have it under your belt. How important is your liberty to you? You could take the book that I've written, the comparative law text. It's 958 pages. Read 3 pages a day. You wouldn't understand all of it, but I bet you would. Now, you'd understand what I wrote quicker than understanding what Blackstone wrote. Why? Because I write in a style that's the way Americans talk today. He didn't. He wrote in a style of English like they talked back then. A little bit different. More toward like the King James is. Not quite, but more toward it. And you'll get the first principles. If you get the first principles, friends, neighbors, and kin, you'll know more than the lawyers. Well, most of them anyway. You want to understand the Constitution? This is the time. The time has come upon us. I want to read you something I wrote here. Two or three things. I'm talking too much about what I want to talk about, what's coming to mind. This really happened. This really happened. I wrote this. This really happened. When yours truly was in grade school, sitting at the kitchen table with the U.S. map on the table, trying to learn the states and their capitals, his father came in from the oil patch covered in fresh crude, hat to heel. I never saw him happier. He would not stop talking to my mother about how good it felt to be covered in fresh crude. He was a young man then. Mom shooed him back out onto the porch, out on the porch to shed his bibs. In an incurable good mood, he stopped to ask me what I was doing. I'm just a little boy, see. I told him I was trying to learn the states and the capitals. I had a map out in front of me. He looked at the map I had on the table. He pointed to the darkened place. He looked up at it and he saw what's the capital of this state? And Springfield. He looked at the top of the map of the state of Illinois and he saw that darkened place up there where Chicago is. And he said, "See that blackened in area up there atop of Illinois?" He said, "That's a giant tick sucking the lifeblood out of the state." Then he said, "Such parasites or pharisites or whatever you call them will not quit sucking another's blood till they get it all. The only way to stop them is to pull them off and get rid of them, like we pull ticks off our Shep dog's ears and throw them in a coffee can of diesel fuel." Well, they have the same problem in New York State, same problem in Nevada with Los Angeles, same problem in California with, I said Nevada with Los Angeles, no, Nevada, I'm thinking faster than I'm talking. Nevada. I was in Nevada and was already into California. Nevada with Las Vegas. Not Reno. Reno's not a bad place. The biggest little city in the world. I think that's what they call it. Well, same thing is true in California with the cities there. They've taken over the state. The state police in Illinois. The state police. The whole organization said they're not going to enforce the governor's orders any longer. Listen to this. I want to read you a legal opinion. A legal opinion from Clay County Court. Clay County. Downstate, Illinois, South Effingham. Effingham. Funny sounding, isn't it? But Effingham was named after Lord Effingham, who was the one that stood on the floor of Parliament during the American Revolution and made a speech in support of the colonies. That's why they named this town there Effingham. Lord Effingham made the speech. This is in Clay County, little tiny rural county. Judge in that county court in Louisville, that's the county seat. State representative there sued the judge, or the judge sued the governor of Illinois, sued the governor for all of his BS. That's bottom sediment. That's what they say in the oil field. Chief Judge Michael McHaney of Clay County had this to say at the conclusion of the case he heard yesterday afternoon. That was 2 days ago or three. Mariner versus Pritzker. I think that's the governor's name, Pritzker. He said this in the Clay County courtroom. Listen to this. Reported by a gal named Kathy Sands. Kathy Sands. Here's what the judge said after hearing the evidence against the governor of Illinois. He was sued for trying to imitate a legislator, and decree law. Listen to what this judge said about 2 or 3 days ago. Let me look at the date. 23 May, that's been 2 days ago. This is amazing. Chief Judge, he said to Michael Mahaney, since the inception of this insanity, the following regulations, rules, or consequences have occurred. I won't get COVID if I get an abortion, but I will get COVID if I get a colonoscopy. That's what the judge said. Then he said this, selling pot is essential, but selling goods and services at a family-owned business is not. And then he says, pot wasn't even legal, and pot dispensaries didn't even exist in this state until 5 months ago. And in that 5 months, they have become essential, but a family-owned business in existence for five generations is not. He continues, a family of six can pile in their car and drive to Carlisle Lake. That's a lake in southern Illinois near, well, not far from East St. Louis. He said a family of six can pile in their car and drive to Carlisle Lake without contracting COVID, but if they all get in the same boat when they get to the lake, they will contract it, says the governor. We are told that kids rarely contract the virus and sunlight kills it, but summer youth programs and sports programs are canceled. And he says four people can drive to the golf course and not get COVID, but if they play in a foursome, they will. He says, if I go to Walmart, I won't get COVID, but if I go to church, I will. Murderers are released from custody while small business owners are threatened with arrest if they have the audacity to attempt to feed their families. He says, these are just a few examples of rules, regulations, and consequences that are arbitrary, capricious, and completely devoid of anything even remotely approaching common sense. Excuse me just a minute. I'm going to take a drink. That didn't mean of liquor, but I had to take a drink. States' attorneys in this state, county sheriffs, mayors, city councils, and county boards have openly and publicly defied these orders, followed by threats to withhold funding and revocation of necessary licenses and certifications unless you obey. Our economy is shut down, said the judge, because of a flu virus with a 98 to 99% plus survival rate. Doctors and experts say different things weekly. The defendant cites models in his opposition. Models. Remember that Fauci and that gal that always, well, I like the Bobbsey twins, always talking together, talking about models. Models of what's going to happen. The only thing experts will agree on is that all models are wrong and some are useful. All he's doing is recounting the evidence that was given to him in the arguments. That's what courts are supposed to do. Listen to the evidence, weigh it out in their minds, and tell people what their judgment is. And all he's got to go on, according to our common law, is the evidence presented in court. He says the defendant in this case orders you to stay home. Who's the defendant? The governor of the state. He's the defendant in this case. He's on the hot seat in this little county. This big city boy from Chicago, big city boy, has a $12 million home in Florida where he has sent his wife because he said that's essential to get his wife. Why didn't he just go back to Florida? But I deviate. The defendant in this case, which is the governor, orders you to stay home and pronounces that if you leave the state, you're putting people in danger, but his family members travel to Florida and Wisconsin because he deems such travel essential. He doesn't say they have $12 million homes, but that's what it is. One initial rationale why the rules don't apply to him is that his family farm had animals that needed fed. He didn't have a family farm. He probably owned farmland. He was hiring somebody to farm so he wouldn't have to work. Try selling that argument, he says, to farmers who had to slaughter their herds because of disruption in the supply chain. Now, this is the judge talking. Excuse me, I had to take another drink. When laws do not apply to those who make them, people are not being governed. Now he's getting down to his conclusions. Let me repeat that one. When laws do not apply to those who make them, people are not being governed. They are being ruled. Make no mistake, says Judge McKinney. These executive orders are not laws. Wow. They are royal decrees, he says. Illinois citizens are not being governed, they're being ruled. The last time I checked, said McKinney, Illinois citizens are also Americans. Now he's getting down to the obvious. Illinois citizens are also Americans, and Americans don't get ruled. Now, could he have put Americanism any clearer? Illinois citizens are also Americans, and Americans don't get ruled. The last time a monarch tried to rule Americans, he says, a shot was fired that was heard around the world. That day led to the birth of a nation consensually governed based upon a document which ensures that in this American courtroom, tyrannical despotism will always lose, and liberty, freedom, and the Constitution will always win. I'm going to read that last sentence again. That day led to the birth of a nation consensually governed based upon a document which ensures that on this day, in this, any American courtroom, tyrannical despotism will always lose, and liberty, freedom, and the Constitution will always win.
Well, you better Judge Michael, that judge's name down, Brad.
Judge Michael, here it is. Here it is. Well, Chuck, I hope he doesn't disappear. Judge Michael D. McKinney, Clay County Court in Mariner, Maynard versus Pitzker. Pitzker's the governor. Argued 22 May 2020. Reported by Kathy Sands. And that's what I got out of the meeting.
Was that a federal court, or was it just a county court?
Tiny little rural county court in southern Illinois.
Wow. Well, that's the court we want to operate out of. But anyway.
Yeah, no. Right. Now, I think, I haven't followed up on this, Gerard, but I think this was appealed, and the appellate court just slapped it down and affirmed real quick, but I haven't followed up on it. Let me see. That was good. Let's see if I have something else here I wanted to read, maybe. Let me see. Okay, one more thing I wanted to read. No, I want to read this. Two things. And this is the representative. Representative Bailey is the one to fire somehow. Again, I haven't sorted all this out, but he was behind the case because he was going to the state legislature, and everybody, all these useful idiots in the state legislature, were wearing masks. And they said everybody has to wear a mask. And they're not even meeting in the Capitol. They're meeting in some assembly hall building in the state capitol at some big room someplace, and he wouldn't wear a mask. And somebody said that girly boy legislators from Southern Illinois, through Southern Illinois State Representative Darren Bailey from the State House, and that this is me writing, but to call these legislators girly demeans that word and worse, and it demeans all the girly, intelligent, and multi-talented gals, including my mother, Wanda May, that I know and love. From Representative Bailey's neck of the National Woods. No, the legislators that failed to join Representative Bailey in not wearing a mask fit better under the name Useful Idiots. And they threw him out, by the way, Gerard. They expelled him from the legislative chambers of Illinois because he wouldn't wear a mask. And by the way, he represents that county down there where that judge said that. There's a lot's happened in that county, I'll tell you. Let's see, what else? I learned, let me back up here. I'll read one more thing and then I'll quit, Gerard. Can I read one more thing real quick?
Yeah, carry on. It's good.
Okay. Go ahead. this got me to thinking. So I got to thinking about something that happened to me when I was a little boy. And I put this in the public media. It was about the time my brother and I were little boys. Dave and I were little boys, and my father tied a coffee can to the end of a sassafras pole with baling wire, and he put my brother Dave and I to pouring crude oil from the coffee can. We dipped it in the crude oil bucket, poured it from the coffee can into the ears of our sows to kill hog lice. Hog lice. And I remember this distinctly, and I remember even these big words that were said to me because I'd never heard them before. But we were doing this, and I didn't understand what we were doing, but it was kind of fun because David and I pour that crude oil in these in the old sow's ears, and Dad had them crowded up with a squeeze gate in the shed. And you'd pour that oil in their ears, and they'd flop their heads, and their ears would flop back and forth and sling that oil everywhere, and it was all over us, and we liked to get dirty, and it was fun. But then finally I said, why are we doing this? And the odd thing is that 60 years later, I still remember exactly what he said. And he said this, my dad, he said, a parasite will never quit until he consumes his host. A parasite will never quit until he consumes his host. That's why we're pouring this oil in these sow's ears. And then I conclude, taxes are never enough. Taxes are never enough for low-life, egg-sucking dogs and mangy bloodsuckers. Then the Fed banksters throw inflation on top, followed by governors ordering the death of our businesses, our livelihoods, and our churches, and they're trying to finish us off. They're just trying to finish us off. Now, finally, I'm getting some relief. I hope you're getting some relief. I read that to you so you could have some relief. I'm getting it. And I see that Americans, and I can feel it, what does the Declaration of 76 say? Doesn't it say, let me read what it says here. I was told this when I got out of high school. Steve Britt, preparing us for the big red-headed basketball player from the University of Evansville, preparing us for the Constitution test to get out of high school. And he said, this stuff might come in handy sometime. There it is. And it's coming in handy. All experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces the design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government. That's quoting from paragraph 2, U.S. Declaration of 76. Well, Gerard, thank you very much for letting me unload what was swelling up inside of me today. And what I say here is my comments alone, and not necessarily what National Liberty Alliance believes, but I suspect they probably do. And we look forward to talking to you again. Back to you, Gerard.
Thank you, Brent. That was pretty good. Did you say that judge that made that ruling, that the appellate court affirmed it, they upheld it?
I heard that from a friend, Gerard, but I didn't check it out and follow up on it.
Oh, okay.
As Will Rogers says, only know what I read in the papers. I only know what I read on the Internet.
Right.
Okay. And was that Maynor versus Fisker in Clay County, Illinois?
Yeah, let me read that. That's Terry, isn't it?
Yeah.
Terry. Maynor, Mainer, V, Pritzker, Pritzker. And that was reported by a reporter by the name of Kathy Sands, S-A-N-D-S.
I mean, you would think that the appellate court would never have the cayunas to rule against something like that. That was so eloquently written, and he brought it right back to the Revolution. I mean, that would give people an excuse to go get their guns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think the appellate courts disagreed with him. That's what I heard, or disagreed with him.
Yeah, it'd be crazy. I think look at where everything is going and the people coming up now. This has backfired on the deep state for sure. Yeah.
Well, Gerard, we're just waiting. I shouldn't say Gerard. We. I've got a mouse in my pocket. I figure you're like me. I'm just waiting for somebody to say the obvious. That's all. That's all we're waiting for. And he said it, so I'm happy.
Yeah, yeah. And it really is. I said the other day, this is a perfect example of that story where the little boy says the king has no clothes.
That's good.
This whole virus thing, it's all imagination. It's all bull, you know?
Yeah, it certainly is. And it's downright funny. I posted in public media, I said, I never thought I'd solve it. I never thought I'd see the day that so many Americans would put their brains in a 5-gallon bucket and fire a slug into it. And I was amazed that people got upset about that. Of course, a lot of them are probably, well, they're feeling guilty. I suppose they feel like they've done that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got a little of an announcement to make on something that's developing in the heartland. And I don't want to mention the state or any names now because, you know, it's still in the works. At any rate, there's a lot of governors that have become dictators and drunk with their power, and there's a lot of people complaining. And in this one particular state, there's a lot of businessmen that are really ticked off because this particular governor has extended the close down, and they want to defy the governor, and they want to sue this particular governor. And in this state, it just so happens that we have some constitutional sheriffs that have banded together. So we've been talking to the people that are having this problem up there, and these sheriffs, and we are now collecting affidavits from the businesses, and at some point we're going to catalog them on our site. And I don't know if we'll do an indictment or not, but the sheriff's going to take them, and he's going to bring them into a grand jury over there in his state, and get the indictment and maybe even serve it on the governor. Now, I don't know that he'll arrest her, but that would drive a court case, and the sheriff has the ability to assemble a grand jury if there's not one already assembled that he can use. So this is something that's developing that NLA has their finger in, and we have a bunch of sheriffs that are very constitutionally adept, and they've taken some of our courses and things like that, and required their deputies to take their courses, and so it's exciting because we could get that case we've been waiting for, so. That's going down as we speak, so I'll keep everybody up to date on how that develops out.
Well, Gerard, the Bible says, "Do not despise the day of small things." And whatever NLA is doing may be small in somebody's eyes, but we don't know, and nobody knows the effect any of us are having of all the small things we're doing. So whatever you're doing out there, don't be discouraged or downplay yourself if you're talking or if you're working or both or whatever you're doing. It's important if you are headed in the same direction that God wants you to be headed. Back to you, Gerard.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Let's see. It's 10:20. We only have four people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get in, now would be the time. I'm going to open the queue up, because I think we're done with everything else. And so the first victim here is Roseland. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, Roseland.
Hi, Gerard. This is Roseland. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good.
Roseland, excuse me.
All righty. No problem. Yeah, this question, well, let me just say this.
Oh, I don't know what happened there. Q&A session is over. Wow. Let's open that thing back up now. I don't even know where you open it up. Let's see.
Okay. Yeah.
Are you there, Roslyn?
Yeah, I'm there.
I hear you. Everybody else that was in the queue, get back in it. And okay. Go ahead, Roslyn, because I can hear you, so you might as well say your question. Okay. Go ahead, Roslyn. Wait a minute, you're
yes,
muted.
People have to be careful on that board not to push any buttons because that's what happens.
Yeah, you know, you got to be careful where you're hovering your mouse, too, because I don't know that you got to push a button. I would just stay out of there if you don't got
to. Well, it does have a red box there that says end session, or you can go up to the Q&A, click on Q&A, and a black box on the top, and and then reset it up for mute or something like that.
So, right, right.
But anyway, yeah, be careful of those people that are just in there on the board and poking at things.
Right. Okay, so I let me see. We still have Roslyn unmuted, so go ahead, Roslyn.
Okay, good. All right, well, first of all, let me just say, yeah, I'm from Allegheny County, PA, and it's nice to meet you all over the, finally, I mean, voice to voice. I've been within LA for about 4 years, and just was based mostly studying all that time because I work full time and didn't have much more time to do much else. But I was able to get an interview for you, John and Gerard, with Dr. Dave, and I don't know if anything more has come of that. I look every week and I don't see, you know, the interview listed yet. So I'm still looking for more, but
I think John got interviewed by Dave Jan. I missed that call, but I think John did it on his own. If I remember right.
Well, yeah, I've heard the same, that he did get interviewed. And
I did do an interview with him. He said it would be a couple of weeks or so before he put it up. And I heard back, maybe it was from you or from somebody else maybe, that he was waiting for a certain time to post that up there. I guess he's waiting for something to happen. You know, bear in mind that what we're doing here appears to be very radical to anybody who is not, familiar with common law and our founding documents. I mean, everybody's somewhat familiar with our founding documents, but very few people have really, analyzed it, taken a look at it sentence from sentence and try to really dissect it and try to understand what the document has to say. And those documents, of course, is the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, which all three are our founding documents. It is difficult for people to digest this. And until they start to, hear a lot of what our founding fathers had to say, and people start to look into what our heritage actually is, that's when the bell goes off. And then they're able to understand that, hey, yeah, I am free and independent. Hey, I am the one who made the law. I'm above all statutory law. It has nothing to do with me. I'm only under common law, under the laws of nature, and nature's God. And that's a big step for people to take and to realize the liberty that they truly have, because then they have to come up with the term. I've talked with lots of people who've said lots of things, but particularly people, for instance, if you talk about all of these things with traffic violations, these are code violations, and it's all for commercial business, has nothing at all to do with us, and it's very easy to prove that too, by the way. Matter of fact, I decided that I got a ticket. I decided I'm going to prove it in that court or take it into the federal court, because I've had it with their tickets. I don't want any more of them. So I'm not going to pay him no more. But in any event, when you tell someone that, these are illegal things that these town cops or city cops or even state cops are, applying upon us, these code violations, because we're not in the commercial business, people don't really get an understanding of that. And they think, well, everybody's going to break the law. Everybody's going to do all kinds of crazy things. They're going to pass red lights. They're going to not stop at stop signs. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. People by nature conform in society. Now, once in a while, you get a moron that doesn't, but you have to deal with that person. But generally speaking, everybody's going to stop at a red light. I'm not going to not stop at a red light. I'd be insane. Everybody's going to stop at a stop sign or at least come so, slow that then you can see nobody's around and continue on. I mean, we're going to obey those rules, but they're not laws. And people have a very difficult time digesting that kind of thing because they've been trained as a slave for so long, all their lives. They've been trained as a slave. I speak to myself first. We've been trained as slaves. So it is difficult. And hopefully, the doctor, he's a pretty bright guy, and he's involved in lots of different things from listening to the conversations he's got. So I think he understands what we're doing. And we'll wait on him to see when he feels that he's going to release that particular interview. It is a mouthful, or an earful, shall I say, an earful interview, because people who are not familiar with those things of common law, it's going to be totally new to them.
Yeah, and looking on the side where the glass is half full rather than half empty, Dave Ganda has a lot of very good contacts reaching up into the White House. So if he's saving that interview for something, he may be in, you know, one of the things that Trump and the military is doing right now is the art of war. And they may not want that interview until they're ready for it, until they're ready to support it, or until they're ready to spring something. And when they're bringing, because I believe they're going to bring the rule of law back. Because right now, you know, one of the things by letting the governors do things instead of Trump stepping up and saying, "Okay, I declare an emergency. We're shutting the country down." He said, "No, I don't have that authority. I leave it up to the governors." Well, that was a fishing lure type thing to give them a chance to hang themselves. And he knew that would, and so he's always playing this game. Sometimes he makes me nervous, don't get me wrong, but it always seems to work out. So I would think if he's saving that interview about common law and everything that John talked about that day, it's because they're probably planning on introducing that, and they need the bottom to come out. He's bringing the top down. Us coming in as National Liberty Alliance, we're the people, the bottom coming up, and the executive branch and all these guys that are for that stuff, they have to have the support of the people for this thing to fly. So, if he could put us up as, look, here's a group that have formed their own common law grand juries because the courts aren't working. Look, it's perfect for him. I don't see why he wouldn't lift us up when the time is right. So that's my hope. That's what I'm praying for. Because if there ever was a time when the country's ready for it, it's now. So.
And one other thing. If anybody has the opportunity to get a hold of Dave from X22, that is the interview we really want. We'd love to be interviewed by Dave.
Yeah, well, I've tried. I've actually sent something to him, but yeah, I may try again. And
please do. And anybody else that could try, please try and see if they can't connect it with Jan, who can then connect them with me, and then we can end it. Because I'll tell you what, that is a place we really want to be. The people who listen in on that are really up to date of what's going on. They'll be able to receive this quite quickly.
I had another idea because I was listening to somebody who is also wonderful, excellent. His name is Scott Kesterson, and he does a podcast called Bards of War. It's really excellent. He doesn't have the numbers Dave from X22 has, but he has a really wonderful podcast, and he actually had Roger Stone on last week. And when I heard this, it made me think that is it possible, and this is really why I called in to ask if you thought that it would be possible to offer Roger Stone the opportunity to join his case to NLAs, because this would do two things. He's trying to raise money for these, million-dollar lawyers in D.C. that turn on you and don't do anything for you, but he would be able to get, the support of this case to hold up his in court, to, put them in check. And then also we would have the opportunity to introduce him to what we do, and that may give us quite a bit of notoriety. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a very, very good idea. If someone could connect with Roger and actually where, we can have a conversation, a private conversation with him and discuss the different things, how we understand what's going on with what he's doing, what he thinks, then explain on how we would go about dealing with his particular problem. We've got a lot of things we could do with that, and we could pull it into the common law grand jury's court and bring it to a decision and order to that judge. We could do a few things. First of all, we can send to that court an amicus curiae on his behalf, okay, just like they're talking about. We could do an amicus curiae, and in that amicus curiae, force the judge to respond to that as a show cause, and then we can, and if he ignores that, we can then move his case into our court with a final paper and a decision in order. As a matter of fact, we could do it very quickly as a summary judgment because common law would require something, anything in the statutory process, as long as it's in protection of a unalienable right statute, you know, then a summary judgment is of course okay in common law. And that's written up in American jurisprudence, and so we can find it there in our history. And that's one of the main purposes of a federal court, is for them to be there to protect the unalienable rights of the people from any court anywhere in the country, in a nation, shall I say. And whereas they can go to any federal judge and request a summary judgment for after, and look at, if your rights being violated, there's nothing to talk about. You can move very quickly through that process. And we could do the same thing if you'd be interesting to do from his perspective and most of the people's perspective. It's a radical move, but from our perspective, it is the natural law process.
Yes. Well, that's what I'll do then. I will make that recommendation to him, something short and sweet, hopefully, so he'll read it and see what he says. Because it's like you said, John, it seems so foreign to us, and yet it's so simple, it's so profound, and it's such a simple solution, but it's so foreign to our mind right now because of how we've
right.
been trained.
What people need to really appreciate is the mindset that's required, and you get that from reading the Constitution and putting everything in its proper place, you know, of authority. You know, authority starts with God. You've got to find out, well, where did God give us the authority of this? It really starts off in Genesis, to subdue. That's where it starts off particularly. It gets into detail, and God sets it up for us with Moses when he delivered them out of Egypt and into the Promised Land, and set up a process that we have duplicated, and we are Israel. Israel in a lot of day, that's who the United States is. Remember, Israel identifies with the people of God. The word Israel is another name for Jesus Christ. Israel is my son. And the children of God is also called Israel. It's a nation, it's a religion, and it's a people. And ultimately, the true Israel of God is the true body of Christ, or the body of believers. And so, you know, with that is when if people can understand that we get our authority from God, the people get our authority from God, and then we have the unalienable right of self-governance. So we set up what we have as a constitution. So we wrote the law, and you know, all of the agencies and of course, you know, the executive and the judicial, and of course the legislative, all of those powers and authorities, we gave them those authorities. We decided on what we would give them and what we wouldn't give them. And so we wrote the law for them. We are, and at that point is when people can appreciate the fact that we are above the Constitution and they are mm-hmm. under the Constitution, and we are not held to any man's law. Man's law is called positive law. Those are statutes and codes, but if they're lawful and they're given the proper weight through this process I just spoke about, from God to man to the country or the nation through a constitution, then that's all lawful. And then it's, I think people can see it if they get that picture, and it's a mindset that people have to have when they look at common law and they look at the judicial processes and they look at whatever they call rules of the law of courts, and understand whether they're at equity or law courts, and understand the difference between that, then people can understand this process and see it much more clearly and appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. Okay. Is Francine trying to say something? No. Okay.
Yeah, it looks like go ahead, Rosalyn.
Okay. Well, I was going to attach, I'll write something short, as short as possible, maybe just a page, and I'll attach the Declaration of Restoration of Law of Land. Hopefully he'll take a look at that, because he's a very, very bright man, so it shouldn't be too much for him to look at that. And the more you read it, the more it just, you realize this is real. This is finally something real. And it's not just, like you say, some man's opinion, something flippant, but but it's so weighty. But anyway, I think we need an awakening in this country. We big time need an awakening so we can see things from God's perspective, because that's really where this comes from.
Well, I do truly believe we are going through an awakening, and a lot of people are seeing that. I don't know if people really understand how big this awakening is, because it goes further than awakening to the fact that we have been duped and that we have been taken over by a foreign power, and we've been under this kind of a power for all of our lives for a long time, and also even beyond, other things anyway, I lost my train of thought on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're headed towards an awakening. I do see that. And I think that perhaps the revelation of all this corruption is what it's going to take for people to really open to God's way of seeing things and saying things. And, you know, that's my hope. That's my prayer.
Well, again, awakening, that kind of rekindled my mind of what I was thinking. You know, also there's an awakening in our technology, things that have been hidden from us for a long time. I mean, there's all kinds of things out there, free energy and stuff, that I'm sure is available for us, and maybe even more access into space than we realize that we have been actually in space, maybe a lot deeper and more than we realize. I'm not sure about that one, because look, going into space is really tough. I don't know how anybody thinks, and I listen to some of these scientists talk, and I'm surprised, because these people are scientists. They talk about, you know, sending people to Mars, and, you know, just to get there, when they get there, they're going to be crippled. I mean, who's going to carry them out of their spaceship there? I mean, you know, they've been in without gravity for, it takes, what, 9 months at the fastest possible way to get to Mars? And then when you get to Mars, you got to live under one-third the gravity. How are you going to come back here to this after a year or something, or 2 years out there? I mean, if you can even make it back here. And the other thing is the planet's dead. It doesn't have any protection from the sun. There's no magnetic, what would you call it? It doesn't have a magnetic field. What's that called, Gerard?
It has no like the Van Allen belts, which protect us from the rays of the sun, you know, from the solar flares that actually bounce them around the Earth. They don't penetrate, and that saves us a lot. You know, when you have no atmosphere, there's nothing for those that radiation.
And that magnetic field is what helps to protect that quite a bit.
Right,
of that.
That's what the northern lights are. The northern lights are all that radiation, because on the poles there's less magnetic field, and that's where they come in. And that's why when you go to the North Pole and South Pole, you get all those electric lights showing the sky. That's all that radiation coming in. So
this idea of traveling, through space long distances is really, you know, look at it. If there's a way we can go to, if there is such a thing, and I think there might be, you know, like an underspace, you know, going underspace somehow, subspace or whatever you want to call it, if that's possible, if that is real, and you can get some from point A to point B very quickly, well, that solves one of the problems. But the other problem is gravity. You know, you go to an Earth that's 10 times the size of our Earth, you'd be flattened like a pancake. You know?
Well, I think they've solved that stuff with the ship. They have to build a ship in outer space, and a big centrifuge provides false gravity. It spins, and you walk on it, just like the Earth does. So
right.
they have these hallways that are spinning all the time.
But I think that would have to be huge. That would have to be a huge ship.
Well, that's
yeah,
why you
I
would
see.
Build it out, yeah, in outer space. I mean, it wouldn't have to be huge. Look, you could make a ship that has a spinning centrifuge for two guys if you really wanted to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess you could. I don't
mean,
know.
What, what's it need? A 50-foot circle? A 100-foot circle? I mean, that's. But the big problem is it doesn't seem like we can get outside the Van Allen belts, because unless we have something besides lead to build a ship out of, which is very heavy to lift up into space, that radiation. You know, when we sent guys up into that outer atmosphere, out of the atmosphere, going around the moon. They claim that they were noticing these flashes in their eye, and it turned out that was radiation that went right through the hull of the ship and burned holes in their retinas because they weren't protected. And they know that radiation would kill us. So unless we get a ship that can shield that radiation, and it would take something like, I don't know, 2 inches of lead, because that's how you know, strong some of those alpha wave emissions from the sun are. So that's a problem, unless they come up with some space-age material that's not heavy, that can reflect radiation. And who knows if they have it or not, because they're not telling us. You know, we got Area 51 and all this secret stuff. And that's another problem. You know, in that Kennedy speech, one of the things was you know, secrets. Governments keeping secrets was abhorrent. And that's you know, all this secret stuff that the people can't know. That's one of the problems. They think they got to keep everything secret.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right.
So anyway.
Well, I do agree,
Rosalind.
There'll be a lot of thank you, and thanks again for everything you do. I'm just overjoyed to be a part and to do what I can.
Okay.
And by the way, they have to keep it secret, otherwise they go to jail.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's something we got to get rid of. Look, you know, Congress needs to be responsible and also have to be, you know, we have to get real people there and get rid of the people who are not real in the sense of being statesmen and not politicians. But yeah, look, the only thing that should be secret, there should be very little that is secret, you know.
Look, when people come up with inventions, the government comes over and takes them, and they either buy them or they threaten them or kill them. And I have firsthand experience with this, as far as getting better gas mileage on cars, because I work with a Chrysler engineer in putting HHO generators and talking about taking fuel down to its a plasma form. And there is technology out there. And one of the things that I know for a fact from this guy who's a Chrysler, a systems engineer, is that at some point in the 2000s, there were all these guys making vapor carburetors that were getting fantastic mileage on gas. And what they did was they got together with the fuel companies, and they reformulated the gas so that it would not break down into a vapor where it was completely atomized. See, that's the problem with gas. You have to break it down so that none of it is unburnt. So they've made gasoline so that its molecules will not break down, and they only did it for one reason, so that the cars would use more gas. As far as I'm concerned, that's a crime that they allowed them to do that. You know, we got to fix emissions. We got to do this. We got to do that. The green. Well, look, if you can get a car that gets 200 miles to the gallon, don't you think that's going to reduce emissions as opposed to a car that's getting 10 or 20 miles to the gallon? It has to. It's impossible not to. Of course, they don't want that.
That will lend to the awakening is the removal of these people from, like, the patent office who've been stealing all these wonderful inventions, and when that is freed up, I think there's going to be so many good things that'll happen that this is all going to be part of the whole awakening. But
yeah,
anyway,
if I had something that was really good, I wouldn't patent it, because that's exactly what's going on, and they're sending them all to China. China's been stealing out of our patent office for years.
So yeah, a lot to fix.
But anyway, there used to be a book out there when John and I first got started down this path, and what's his name there? Glenn Beck was pushing it, and it was called The 5,000-Year Leap. It's a very, very good book that anybody should read if they want to get the basis. But the reason he named it The 5,000-Year Leap is because he said that if we could reinstate these principles, the United States and the world would take a 5,000-year leap into the future, because his opinion was that all this stuff they've been suppressing would come out. Health, you know, fuel. Hey, look, they even suppress good health. They don't want good health. They want you to get to it. Hey, look, once you're 55, 60, they want you to kick off, because now you're a useless eater. You're not paying as much taxes. You know what I mean? And so that's their plan, basically.
They've been killing these natural doctors, from what I've heard.
Oh, yeah. There's disgusting stuff going on. And I've known it for years.
By the way, we do have a copy of the book, okay, 5,000-Year Leap. You can get it up on our website. It's available both in written form, PDF form, and we also have it in MP3, so you can play the MP3s and read along with it if you want. You'll find that under our education tab. If you highlight education, come down to books, and then you come over to 5,000 year leap, and you click on that, and you can find that. You know, we also have up there essays and lectures, and one of them we have is trial by jury essay, which
yeah,
you can find again under education, essay lectures, and then click on trial by jury essay. We have that both in PDF form and MP3. So these are two books that you can kick back and listen to while you're driving, maybe to work or a long distance, or just want to relax, maybe out in the sun, get rid of the virus and stuff, you know, and listen to the MP3, and you can read along with it. Everybody should be doing these. Both of these are powerful. 5,000 Year Leap is an extremely powerful book, but also this essay. By Lysander Spooner, Trial by Jury, extremely powerful essay.
Another book that's written by the same author, if I remember right, is The Making of America. That has information that the 5,000 Year Leap doesn't get into, and that's by the same author, I believe, and it's very good.
I think he co-wrote that. He's the main author of that book, but I think he was co-writing that with a few other people. But
right.
Definitely he's the main... To get these books, you can get them super cheap, and we have them on our website where you can get it. You go to NCCS.com, which is National Center for Constitutional Studies, and you can buy these books. If you buy like four or five books at a time, you get them for like $5 or $10 a piece.
We used to buy the cases.
Well, you could buy a case of a book.
Right, they were like $5 a piece if you bought a case.
Correct. I was given a gift, The Making of America. I think you were given the same gift, right?
Yes, I was, and that's a really good book.
And that comes from that place, but you can also buy these. There are great books here. Let me tell you something. They got the real Thomas Jefferson. You want to know who Thomas Jefferson really is? You can go see it in his own words and the people who knew him, because that's all this is. This is all places concerning information concerning Thomas Jefferson that have sources, where they come from, who said what, and a lot of his letters. There's also the real George Washington and the real Benjamin Franklin, and of course this book, The Making of America, The 5,000 Year Leap, and many, many, many other books.
Dave Barton write the one about the real Thomas Jefferson and all those others? Was that Dave Barton?
No, he didn't write that. That also, let me see, who wrote the... I never looked to see who put that together. Let's see. Thomas Real Thomas Jefferson. Well, the National Center put it out. I don't know that there's an actual author. It may be the organization themselves that brought it together.
I know what you're talking about now.
I think isn't his name Susskind?
You know what? Cleon Susskind is part of this.
He was the biggest
part of all these books, I think.
He started it. He's the one that started it. In a little garage.
Andrew,
remember the story?
Allison and Richard Maxfield, Cook, and Cleon Susskind.
Yeah.
Those are the individuals that put the real time. And I want to tell you, I was blown away by this book. The information, the knowledge about this man given to who he really was and what he was all about, what he said, is just amazing. And this is where I found out how he tried numerous times, even before 1776, when he was a legislator of Virginia, on two occasions, he tried to change the law concerning slave ownership in Virginia, and he couldn't do it. So he was trying to push at least the ability to free the slaves, because it was illegal to free a slave in Virginia. And that is why he remained a slave owner until his death, because he refused to give the slaves to other men. And he wanted to free them, and he couldn't do it.
And speaking of books, if I may ask just one more quick question. The Anti-Federalist Papers, I've been listening to the recordings, but I really wanted to find, because I heard number 18, and it was talking about the law in such a way that I thought, I've got to read this. So I have been ordering the Anti-Federalist Papers on Amazon, and all I get is a few papers. I can't get the whole set. So I'm wondering, do you know?
Well, we have them all on our website.
Okay, written as
We have the Federalist Papers, all of them. We have the Anti-Federalist Papers. I think we even have the MP3s. Let me see.
The MP3 is what I've been listening to. And but I didn't.
Yeah, we have the MP3s and everything on it.
We have them written though.
Huh?
Okay.
They are written. They're in print.
Yeah. What people need to understand is the Federalist Papers were written, you know, which ultimately were papers written by the individual. A lot of them was written by oh goodness, what was his name? Hamilton wrote a lot of them, but others participated too. And that's what really was a discussion of the creation of our Constitution. The Anti-Federalist Papers, they were pushing more towards the problems with some of the issues that they came up with in putting together the Constitution. And they solved a lot of those problems in a couple of ways. I think, and this is my opinion, I really don't know if this is a fact, but I suspect that the Anti-Federalist Papers had a lot to do with getting Article 1, Section 10 into the Constitution. Now, I may be wrong with that. That's kind of a guess from my perspective.
And they used pseudonyms, too. They didn't even use their real names when they were writing them, right?
Right.
Some of them.
Correct.
but the main work that really was pushed upon that was the Bill of Rights, and it talks about that in the beginning of the Bill of Rights. It talks about the fact that there was going to be an addition, and they agreed to it, and so on and so forth. And this was that addition. And the Bill of Rights is a very unique paper because it really fixes all the problems that are in the Constitution that you may find or misinterpretation of it. Because if you read the Constitution in light of the Bill of Rights, meaning being anything that violates those Bill of Rights is null and void, as if they never were. And that's really the genius of the Bill of Rights. And when I hear people say, well, we really didn't need the Bill of Rights, well, I know either they're speaking out of ignorance or they're the enemy, because nothing could be further from the truth. If we didn't have the Bill of Rights, you think our Constitution is being misinterpreted right now? Forget about it. But when you lay out the fact that you do something and you interpret the Constitution in such a way that affects an individual's unalienable rights, particularly those 10 and more, of course, but those 10 particularly, well, that just neutralizes it, does away with it. So we read the Constitution in light of A, the Declaration of Independence, and B, also the Bill of Rights.
Yes. And in that regard, if not for the Anti-Federalists, we may not have had a Bill of Rights.
Right. Well, the Anti-Federalists were the ones that brought the Bill of Rights. And behind that, he was working, it was Jefferson, he was away at the time, but he was working, who was it? I think James Madison, was it?
Madison, he, yeah. Madison yeah. Did most of the writing because Jefferson...
It was said that one would speak and the other would finish the sentence.
Right,
these guys
right,
were both highly educated in the same areas, maybe one more here and another there, but they were highly educated, good speakers and writers particularly, although Jefferson had a very, very low voice, so he didn't do well as an oratory, but he, of course, his writings is gold. And of course, they're very well educated in the common law, you know. And Jefferson, he was the founder of this of our structure, of our government structure, the three branches and so on, which he took out of ultimately the Bible.
Right, and that's explained in that 5,000-year leap. They could do a pretty good layout of that. Anyway, it's 11:00, and we got more people in the queue than we had when we started. So we got to get moving on here. Thank you, John.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rosalind. And I'm going to take a little more time. I'm going to do a little plug. I've been on Patriot Soapbox. I do Wednesday from 11 to 1. And Brent does those same hours the day before and the day after me. And Patriot Soapbox has a pretty impressive lineup of people being interviewed this week. One of them being Sidney Powell. That's Flynn's lawyer. And she's a very well-spoken woman. I mean, you have to hear her talk. She's such a good, orator, and the way she, she's got humor and everything else, and very intelligent. And they have one, I don't forget what senator, but it was somebody along the lines of Nunes or so. I could be wrong, but they got one of those senators that have been in the news all the time, bringing up a lot of stuff that we like to hear, that everybody else is afraid to bring up. Mm-hmm. And so they got like six or seven people coming on this week, that you don't normally get, you know, on shows like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you're interested, you should tune in. And, you know, there's a lot of good mm-hmm. things happening. And Brent is on there also. And so I'm giving a plug to that. And, of course, this other thing is playing out over there, too. So, anyway, I'm going to move on. Thank you, Rosalind. Let's see. We got, I'm going to unmute Heather Lee from Michigan, I think it is. Go ahead, Heather Lee.
So I'm just coming, I'm here. Yes, I just had a comment, a follow-up to having a meeting with my sheriff in Michigan. And I was given the name of James Puscaldo. And I just wanted to reiterate, I guess, that he needs to be contacted. He is a 80-year-old retired common law attorney, lawyer, and I had a personal conversation.
Do you have his contact information?
I sent it to you, and John, Gerard, James, and Francine, you all have it. And there is an O on the end of his name. I was given that.
Francine, did you get that? We'll see if Francine got it. I missed it if you sent it to me. Francine.
Okay, then.
I'm sure it's in my in basket, John. You want me to send you a copy, put it in Skype or what?
Yeah, when we talk, you can pass it to me when we talk next time.
Okay.
He heads up. He was in Michigan. He was my neighbor. And he also is working with the sheriff just as a, he said, just as a we the people, because he has allowed his license. Okay, he's retired, so his license is expired. However, he has the vintage of all those years, and he is constitutional, and he is very intelligent. And
I believe that's the guy that's working with Robert Overule. I think his name came up today. He's kind of in the background there, like helping school the sheriff, one of the sheriffs over there.
Robert has, I don't believe he's contacted him yet, because I contacted Robert about him, but he can, I mean, maybe he did, but I talked to James, and he was in the process of moving this week, and it's the first contact, and I just wanted to bring that up, because he's very interested in NLA, and the contact came from my sheriff, Borkovich, who is leading the sheriffs in Michigan. And so I talked to this James personally, and I just wanted to make a note and that he does want to be contacted. And make sure that you spell his name correctly, because on the first correspondence to you, I left off the O because that's how I thought it came through when my sheriff wrote it down. His penmanship isn't that great. Anyway, so when I looked it up, I realized that it was an O. So this is, I just thought that this, he could lend a lot to NLA, and he is more than willing, I talked to him personally, and he's more than willing to participate, I believe, if someone will contact him. He also had rightmichigan.com, which was an active constitutional site. And like I said,
do you know if he's looked at any of our paperwork that we've, you know, has he went to our site and perused around at all?
No, he hasn't. No.
Oh, well, he's
not that I know of.
That's what we got to do. Yeah. Well, we will definitely be contacting him, because I know for a fact his name came up. So it's in the, if it hasn't happened yet, it will happen. Okay.
Yeah, well, I sent it to Robert, so that's probably why, that's a possibility. And the other thing was that, I'm praying that God causes this to come to pass in Michigan and all aspects of everything that is involved from every, I had a 45-minute talk with my, conversation with my sheriff, and he said a lot in that time span, so. there's a lot to that. And the other thing, just to comment about the innovations and inventions of the American people and it being held back and such. I thought it was very interesting because usually when somebody invents something, they try to kill you.
That's right.
And I know two people right now that are holding on dearly to their lives because they have information that, one has an invention and the other one has books. He's a doctor and it's ways to be healed. And they go after people like that.
Because it's big dollars the other side of that.
Right. And then another comment, and then I'll leave it with this. I live in a boulder castle, and I have my bed is underneath the sky. It's all open to the sky and glass. And so every night I look at the stars, and in the face of God, when I go to sleep, and interesting enough, for the last year I've seen a lot of flying objects. I mean, traveling objects. They're not falling stars. They're not satellites. They're not this or that. They are actually traveling objects, traveling stars, traveling light.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very interesting because there's a lot of activity up there. And I don't think it hasn't just been this last year. It's been for a while, but it seems to have increased this past year. And I find that very interesting as to you're talking about outer space and such. And I see this all the time. In fact, one of them this week started traveling. One of the stars started traveling and came across over the top of me. And this is way up. This isn't a jet plane or something. Okay. This is in outer space. And this thing banked. And it actually gave off a ray of extreme light, like a laser beam light. And at that point in time, I got very angry because I could see it. And I know that there's technology that they really like to utilize. And I know that there's much more than we are told.
Oh, yeah.
And
it could be good or it could be evil. Because there is a passage in the Bible, I think it said, I see Satan as a star or light fallen from heaven. Because Lucifer means light. And so, I've read some stuff that they believe that these demons, that's one of the ways they manifest is those lights. Uh-huh. Because they're in our atmosphere, basically. That's where they reside. And when men invite them in, that's how they materialize. Right. You got to let them into your body, into your soul, and allow them to operate. And that's their thing is to come in and overtake man. And really, what they want to do is change this creation instead of from God's image and likeness. You know, the evil one wants things put in his image and likeness, and that's the battle. You know,
that's the battle. Well, the powers and principalities of darkness, but we know that we win in Yeshua.
Absolutely.
Jesus Christ. And so I ran downstairs and put the book of Revelation on and verbally, and then I started to do warfare over it. How dare you beam your light into my house? I'm a child of the Most High God. So that was the wrong move. Anyway, so on that note, I'll let it be. All right. Just want to pay attention to James Fuscato, okay?
Right.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Have a blessing. Good night. Yeah. Thanks, Heavenly. Okay, we're going to go to Dave from North Carolina. Moving right along. Go ahead, Dave. You've been unmuted.
Okay, good evening.
Good evening.
I'll make it short. I need to speak with either you or John or Ms. Alan Winters in the next day or two, if that's a possibility.
I'm sure one of us can arrange that.
All righty. You should have my email address. It should be in my membership.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody will email me and give me a telephone number, I'll call you back.
Okay, we could do that.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Yep. Thank you very much,
Dave. And you're right. And I really enjoyed the awakening.
What is it about?
There is a huge awakening going on in this country.
Oh, yeah.
What is it you want to talk to us about?
I wanted to talk to you about code enforcement, for one thing, that's going on in the town that I live in.
Is it not something we could talk about here online?
I'd rather not.
All right, well, it's going to be difficult to get us, but you'll have to make an appointment. Try to go through Jan, and Jan will try to reach up with one of us to connect us in to talk to you. I would say wait at least a week till next week, because this week is really a difficult week, at least it is for me, unless Gerard or Brent.
Code enforcement is a big, big problem. We get repeated complaints with code enforcement, and it's something that needs to be addressed.
All of that has to do only with commercial activity and people
right.
who work for some kind of a government agency, either elected, appointed, or hired, and that's it. It has nothing to do with we the people. Any code or any statute or any regulation applied upon the people who are not participating in any of those activities, it has nothing to do with us. They cannot apply it against us. And therein is, you have to take to argue those points. You can try to argue those points right there in that court, and you might be able to prove it if you have someone with a half a brain there to realize it once you show them the law and how, you know, what things mean. For instance, let me give you an example. Let's take traffic code. I got a ticket recently for uninspected vehicle, okay? And I'm having trouble getting my vehicle inspected, and they're hitting me with money. I'm already paying too much money trying to get it fixed, and they've got to hit me up with money that I got to pay them. I decided I'm not paying them no more. So I wrote a paper in. I sent it in. I let them know. I'm going to have to go down there and talk to them, and I'm going to lay it out straight for them. But I can show very clearly when you look up the code number that they give you, it is a traffic code that goes into a commercial process, you know, the commercial business, and the jurisdiction is TL, traffic law. The jurisdiction of traffic law is commercial, anything commercial on the roads, okay? Anybody running any kind of a commercial business, taxi cab or
trucks
or things of that nature.
I get that.
So that has nothing to do. Well, here's the point. Let me finish the point. Maybe you know it all, but others may not know all of this. But the point is this. It's traffic law. So I printed that out to show what the jurisdiction is. It's traffic law. And I show it has to do with commercial activities in a vehicle that is commercially controlled. And my vehicle is not commercially controlled. I am not participating in any commercial activities. Therefore, traffic law doesn't apply to me. Now, if I can't get them with common sense, if I can't get them to have common sense to recognize that and back off and leave me alone forever, if I can't get them to do that, then I'm taking them to federal court. It's going to be a very expensive thing for them.
I understand. Good for you. However, the situation here in this town where I was raised, I've been here for 67 years, they are doing exactly what the unanimous decision wrote that they were going to do, or what they were doing then, what the king was doing to them over here back then. Well, they're doing it here too. They're erecting all kind of unconstitutional offices, and these people do not have an oath of office. They do not have a constitutional oath. So I don't feel like I need to even talk to them. If they don't have a oath of office, I really don't have anything to say to them. But what happens is that if you don't talk with them, they'll start adding debt to your property tax.
Yeah, listen.
Because they'll take your house.
Listen.
That's exactly how they operate.
The problem is they've got the guns. They got control.
Right.
And they're operating under civil law. Okay. And that's why they don't have an oath. You cannot operate under civil law and try to adhere to the Constitution, because that's water and oil. You can't put it together. It doesn't work. And that's why they have such a problem with that. But these people are too dumb to know. You got to understand, they have been bred to believe the lie. Bar attorneys, hardcore bar attorneys, which is most of them, not all of them, but hardcore bar attorneys, they They believe what they've been taught in school. After all, they spent thousands and thousands of dollars to get their education, so they get their quote-unquote license to operate in court. And look, there should be a requirement of some kind of a level requirement of anyone who is going to go into the courts and make arguments in equity. They need to understand the rules of equity, which really identifies back to common law anyway, the rules of common law. But, you know, they have to understand the procedures, they have to understand the equity, and they have to also know the statutes, the regulations or codes or whatever it is that they're being applied in that particular jurisdiction in that court. So you do want someone who's educated in that area, and that's where these people who are studying to be attorneys, they should be getting that kind of an education. Now, common law is the other side of the coin, because there's equity and there's law. And now, on the common law side, you don't need to be educated in a formal way in order to go into a court and make an argument on behalf of someone else or for yourself. But I can see how they would require someone in equity, in an equity court, with the exception of the person themselves representing themselves. They should be able to do that, of course. So therein is the problem. But the key, of course, is you know, educating ourselves ultimately in the common law, because that's where we're doing the business. And wherever we're brought into these other courts has nothing to do with us. We don't participate in those things.
The judges on the higher level, I do believe that they understand the Constitution and the difference, but they do little voodoo to make themselves feel better. They tell them that we have consented and that we've entered into a contract, whether it be by adhesion or not. And that's actually a false contract, because we never agreed to it. There was never a meeting of the minds. But they're telling them, look at, We got the title on the car, so basically we have control of the car, blah, blah, blah. And they go through this big operation of why they can tell you what to do with your property and with your car and all these little magic word things that they did to make themselves feel better that they're pulling the wool over our eyes, you know. And exactly. I really believe that's why those judges make the rulings that they do, because, look, at when you go in there and you say something that you're not rebutting the presumption that they have, then they have no problem holding you to that secret contract that you don't even know about. You know what I'm saying? So that just makes them feel better. But nevertheless, it's fraud, as John has said a million times. It's still fraud. So, you know, they can't really feel better about that. But you have to, you know, it takes a special person that understands all the things John said about to argue that case in front of them. And if they ever let you argue in front of that judge, he'd have a hard time putting that on the record and then not ruling for you, I think. You know, if they try to never let it go that far. As a matter of fact, if you bring it into a federal court and he sees that you're going to argue like that, a lot of times he'll kick it back down to the lower court and say, get rid of this case, which means pay you off or do whatever they got to do to get rid of you. And a lot of times,
well, it's a summary judgment.
What's that?
What I've received three or four different times is a summary judgment.
A summary judgment for the other side, though, against you?
Summary judgments.
I wrote a lawsuit against some really underhanded criminal activity between the county seat. All those agencies up there, you might as well say, the sheriff's office and everything else. And my lawsuit was good. And the thing about it is, I had exhibits to prove every paragraph that I said that I had anything to say. I could prove it with an exhibit. So they kick it back every time. All I was asking for is a jury trial. And they kick it back every single time with a summary judgment.
Well, let me explain something about a summary judgment. You know, first of all, we have to realize when we go into a court, there's two sides to the court. And it certainly isn't civil and criminal. The two sides of the court is equity and law. That's the two sides of the court. And whenever an individual is brought in before the court, they need to be standing in a court of law, especially if they're trying to pull something upon you that's criminal, that's going to cost you life, liberty, or property, okay? And so therefore, any summary judgment that takes place in a court of law must always be on behalf of the individual. In other words, they come to a summary judgment because they're supposed to protect our unalienable rights. They're supposed to uphold the Constitution. And when they fail to do that and slide us over into an equity court, and they really don't even slide us into an equity court, they slide us into a civil law court, but which has no power, no authority, no constitutional authority, nothing. Okay, they just made that up back in 1934. What was that, four?
Yeah, 34.
Had to get with, yeah. And so they made that up. They just made it up, and nobody said nothing about it. That's how dumbed down we were back then. How can that be, you know? But no one's paying attention to what's going in the courts. And the lawyers and the judges, they're only doing what they're taught in schools, and they've taken control of those bar schools. So they don't really learn the real truth. They learn the New World Order applications to be applied in the court to maintain the status quo, and that's it. So, yeah, any summary judgment that is not in the benefit of the individual being pulled into that court is null and void and means nothing. And if it's a summary judgment on your behalf, then it's in your favor, and that'll be that. But, yeah, they do it the other way around, too. They do a rule, I thought it was a Rule 13. It's been so long since what was that rule where they throw you out, failing to make a statement?
I think Rule 12, wasn't it?
12, okay. Maybe Rule 12. Yeah, it wasn't 13. 12. So they work off Rule 12
They're
and Rule 2.
They're afraid of 13.
Yeah. You better go find out what that is.
Yes, they're superstitious.
Okay. But anyway. Before I get off the mic, though, one other thing. You know, when talking to Sheriff Sterrod and sharing anything particular, you know, probably one of the most important papers you can share with them at the moment, okay, if I can get my thing to open up, go out to our grand jury, highlight that action against the judiciary. The one we filed on August 17th, 2019, which is a decision and order and declaration to restore the law. I know you've been reading that, but that is the one. It's 50 pages, but I'll tell you, that is the one that covers so much. It'll give them such a really good insight on who we are and what we're doing and who the people are, what powers and authorities we come in.
Well, the one sheriff I'm talking to, he might already have that because he's been into our stuff and took our courses. So I'll ask him if he's read that, and if he hasn't, I'll make sure I forward it to him.
Yeah, that's the one. Well, send him to the site and show him where to download it so you can see the rest of the stuff and get
right.
Even better educated.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. Let's go over
Thank
to...
You.
You're welcome. Lucius Gallo. You've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. I'm in Los Angeles, so I'm just wondering how can one protect himself if, you know, they want me to take a vaccine and all this kind of stuff, you know?
Well, are they telling you have to take the vaccine now? I mean, this is recently?
No, I'm just trying to, you know, do something before it. I'm actually in that part.
Look, there's a lot of stuff going on with these vaccines, but there's a pretty good awakening going on, and I really don't believe they're going to go door to door, or even I don't think that the people are going to put up with them forcing tracking, tracing, and vaccine. And I think that we'd have a revolution first, because I think there's at least 1 million people or 100 million people awake already to that. There's a very good doctor, Dr. Batar. And he's got a series of videos out on YouTube, and you got to see video number 6 because he lays it right out. And he's a very impressive guy. You know, he was a military surgeon. He was in special forces. He's got very extensive knowledge of multiple fields of healing. He's one of the top doctors for detoxing people of heavy metals. And he's also a surgeon. I mean, this guy, his credentials are pristine, and he's not afraid of anything, and he's laying it out there. He basically does a real good comparison of what's going on with this virus, and he does it with a bet. At the end of that video, you got to stay to the very, very end, because he puts in about a 3-minute clip where he uses 3 pounds of rice, and he takes it and dumps it on the table. And he separates out these different bundles. He said, look at this. He said, that bundle there represents all the people in the world, 8 billion people. This one here represents, you know, and it's about the one is about the size of a 50-cent piece. He said, this is how many people die of, let's say, diabetes. And he goes through and he has all these different areas, you know, 100,000 people, a million people a year, this and that. And then he goes over here. And this one here is how many people that this COVID-19 will kill in relationship to the rest of the world. And it's one grain of rice. He said, look at all these other ones with 100 and 200 grains of rice. We don't close down the world, much less the country, for them. And it really puts in perspective the lie that they're given. And, you know, they've been trying to bump up the death rate, and it's gotten to the point that anybody with any common sense is starting to see that it's all baloney, their whole thing. And he goes on, he does everything. He talks about how unhealthy it is to wear a mask and how, you know, the surgeon only wears a mask because he doesn't want to contaminate the sterile field they're operating on. And he lays out the whole, you know, germ theory, which they're completely got it backwards purposely, because Fauci and Bricks are working with Bill Gates. They're the ones pushing this mandatory vaccine tracking and tracing, because I believe it's the mark of the beast. If that goes through, right? Bill Gates is like giddy. He can't even stand to wait until they implement this, because you won't be able to renew your driver's license. You won't be able to buy. You won't be able to sell. It's gonna take in all those things that were talked about in Revelation, and they're happening right before our eyes. And if we let them get away with that, well, then woe to us. It's our own fault. Because it's very obvious. As a matter of fact, I just saw a thing today that the UN put out a new website something about the New World Order, and they're bragging about it now. They're at the point they feel like they've won. And so I think that they're just about ready to go down to defeat, because they're so
stupid.
Well,
look, they're all self-deceived, though. I mean, if you would have talked about these things 3 years ago, I'd be worried and concerned. Today, I'm not too much worried and concerned, because bear in mind, once the deep state has been rooted out, and especially when we the people get into the federal courts and take back the court systems all across this nation, but even without that, at that point, they're dead on arrival. These processes and these things that they're trying to do is not going to come to be, because there's not going to be anyone to push through anymore. So it's all a matter of taking out the deep state.
They're so confident because nobody's ever pushed them back before. And right now they're not used to this. They're not used to people fighting back. They're not used to having any kind of resistance to their stuff, because they've been so good at pulling the wool over our eyes and shutting us up and dumbing us down. And like Brent said, you know, that he read that passage, and I think it was Jefferson that wrote it, about people are willing to put up with all kinds of trains of abuses as long as it doesn't get past a certain point. And then they're going to jump up, and that sleeping giant's going to wake. And I think that's what's happening now. I think the sleeping giant is awakening. And
yeah, that was the second paragraph of the Declaration by Thomas Jefferson, who wrote that. Yeah.
Right. So that is definitely, we'll observe a long train of abuses, right? Well, if we don't have a long train of abuses right now, we never have had a long train of abuses. So it's very obvious what's going on here, and it's a, you know.
It's even worse than our founding fathers had it, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, because it's so prevalent. And look, at when else did they ever shut the whole world down on a lie? I mean, this is really unprecedented in all of recorded history. So you got to know that you're in very prophetic times right now. You know, I mean, of course, many people are still asleep because they don't even understand, you know, they don't read the Bible, they don't understand that, and they certainly don't apply it to their lives or the people that are running their lives. And, you know, if America doesn't repent at this point, it's up to us, because the whole world is depending on us. And we are that new Israel. We are that Israel that included the Gentiles. And so we are the people that call ourselves by his name. And whether you want to admit it or not, it has to do with Christianity. And that, because that's where our Constitution was taken from that Mosaic law. You know, the God of nature and nature's God, and it's coming to a head. It's coming to a head right now before our eyes. So it's, you know, to me, it's as plain as the nose on my face, and it's time to get up and do stuff, you know. And, you know, look, we've been at National Liberty Alliance. We certainly picked up the torch and done what we can. But, you know, every little thing, like Brent says, every little thing that you could do is the thing that, you know, it's the straw that breaks the camel's back. We need that final straw that final thing that sinks their ship, and I think it's very close. Anyway, we got, let's see, it's 11:30. What do we got? Okay, we still got five people, so. Anyway, Lucius, I don't even remember what your question was because I went on. So I don't know if we've answered that. So let me know, and I'll move on to the next guy if you're
I just wanted to know what we can say when they come to the door, because in Ventura County, they supposedly they started.
Listen, if they're coming to the door with cops and healthcare workers to give you a vaccination, you should have had a conversation with your local sheriff.
I don't think they got a sheriff out there. If he is, he's probably tainted, and he's in Los Angeles.
Well, you know what? It's very tough in Los Angeles. I would probably run from there, but I would let them know that my gun's coming out the door, and don't come here because you'll be the first death in the revolution. I might be the second death, but you'll be the first. I mean, it requires that much of a resolve. And I'll tell you what, a lot of times when you go after these officials like that, when they know that you're going to fight to the death, a lot of times that's enough for them to turn back, because ultimately they really are cowards. I mean, you know, I mean, I suppose if they know, if you had a bunch of guns sticking out the windows, they'd just love to bring a SWAT team in and kill you. But they got to be careful with that, because they're going to signal people that they're coming, and people are going to go up in arms, you know, and they have not disarmed us. That's the reason that I'm very confident that they won't do that, because if they trigger a revolution, it's going to be one of the worst fights ever, and they're going to lose. We outnumber them 800-1. We have more guns in this country. That's the only reason we're standing here and talking like this tonight, is because they would come. If you were in some communist country, they'd come and pick every one of us up that were on this show for talking the way that we talk. How dare you? But we still do it because they know that, you know, a very large percentage of us, and maybe even a majority, own guns and ammo and keep them in our homes. And that's the one thing that they're afraid of, because you know it's very hard, and it would be a guerrilla warfare. It would be by night, and they would never know who's going to walk up behind them and pop them off while they're going door to door. It's one of the worst things they could possibly do, and they haven't done it, and because they know that just makes people more resolved against them. So it is coming to a head, and I wouldn't worry about it. Look at. Turn to your inner, you know, to your higher power there, and pray, and pray for courage, and you know, I mean, other than that, I would leave there, because you're in a Sodom and Gomorrah type place that's probably going to end up getting destroyed in the if there is a battle, you know what I mean? I mean, if they're that bad, you know, there's look at. Right now, what's going on in Michigan with these sheriffs and stuff, as bad as the governor is, there's some good stuff going on. That's a good place to go, because your local sheriffs over there, the majority of them have already stepped forward saying that they're going to support the people. They got a big problem up there, because these sheriffs are knowledgeable and they're courageous. And listen, the sheriff will through posse comitatus will activate the militia. They don't want to go there. And Donald Trump understands all that, and he's on the side of the people. So I don't know. I don't think it's ever going to happen. I'm like John. I don't believe that they're going to pull. They're just trying to scare us into submission. They haven't passed it yet. And believe me, they're going to have a lot of problems if they think they're going to get it passed, or they think they're going to act on it. So I don't know. Maybe I'll eat my words, but I doubt it. So, you know, I'm just telling you, don't worry about it. Or make plans on not being there. You know what I'm saying? Build yourself a safe room in the house underground that they can't find. you know the old where the Nazis, they used to come in and there'd be a trap door under the house. You know, I mean, that stuff has happened in history. You know, so.
And you know, look at in the Bible, it's pretty clear. If there's anything that's clear concerning the end of the world or the end of time or the end of or the time when nations are judged, is that they will never fill the world with their evil cities. The Bible is clear on that, right. And that's what it is they're trying to do. It's a new world order. They're trying to take over the whole world. You know, I've always had a lot of faith in that something was going to happen, because, you know, God's not going to permit that. He's just not going to. As many people that may think that they're going to do that. It's not going to happen. We have been suppressed and beaten up pretty bad most of our lifetime, especially the last 20 to 30 years particularly, but even longer than that. And they are at the point where they want to take that last and final move and just topple it over and just put us right under you know, as slaves underneath their feet, so to speak. But God said he's not going to allow that. He's not going to allow them to build their evil cities around this world. To fill
you know,
the earth.
All these years, they've always taken one step forward and two steps backwards, you know what I mean? They always made us think they were backing off and then they go forward. And they, you know, and so they play that game. And right now, I think what it is that, you know, look at the evil one. His pride is greater than his power, and he can taste the victory. And he's not backing up anymore. He's full speed ahead forward, and that's going to be his demise.
And he's
I believe.
Defeated foe, and he's deluded. Well,
yeah.
He doesn't know.
That's right. So I hope that helps to bolster your confidence. I don't know what else to tell you, but, you know, it's like keep your powder dry, okay?
Thanks.
Still have more people in the queue, Gerard.
Yep, I'm going to go ahead now. We got Christine is next. Go ahead, Christine. Christine, can you hear me? You've been unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Hi, thank you. I'm so grateful to have found this group and really appreciate all the time.
I'm having trouble. Get closer to your mic or something. I'm having trouble hearing you. Go ahead.
I have earbuds in the speaker, but I think it's my laptop.
Hang on, I'm going to turn my volume up. I can't hardly hear you at all.
Let me see if I can turn that on. Is that any better?
Yeah, see if you can come off speaker and you know.
Yeah, I have
maybe
a microphone really close to me.
Okay, but you're not, okay. Yeah.
I can call back in.
Oh, you sound good
phone.
There. Go ahead, ask your question. I can hear you.
I won't move at all. All right,
okay.
I'll be quick also. I know there's others trying to ask questions too, so. Make it fast. I am wondering if there is a way that I have not yet thought of to peacefully get around not following an order that is null and void.
Well, look at as far as peacefully doing it, you know, that's why we're in the courts with NLA. That's the peaceful method that we're trying to exercise before, you know, we end up coming to blows. And the other way that you can do these things is there's safety in numbers. Don't go there by yourself. You know, if you look at there's more people being abused just like you. It's time to band together. And there's safety in numbers. That's my advice. I don't even want a sheriff going up there on his own because he becomes a singular target. But if they get a group of sheriffs coming in, or they get a tri-county, you know, three counties or four counties, or a tri-state movement going, that's where they're going to be defeated because at that point, public opinion is against them. Look, they only operate well in the dark. When you have other people coming in, that's why our court watcher system has had the successes that it's had. It's because these judges see these people and they're filling out these sworn affidavits after the fact, and the people are using them in their cases, and that makes them very nervous because now there's other people that are documenting what went on, the unconstitutionality that went on that the judge allowed in that court. They're scared.
I've been
of
at this
they understand
for over
that.
A year.
What's that?
I've been at this for over a year, and I realized God has called me to really make as much of a change here in New York as I can. And I've written a remonstrance. I'm prepared to go into the legislature here in New York by next week. I don't know what your organization feels or how you all feel about the remonstrance process. It is very tedious and taken me probably 8 months to learn it and write a very large document plus an amicus brief as a professional. And I'm still not quite done. But that's kind of where I'm at with that. I definitely need support. I have had a really hard time getting a group together in New York, but
New York is tough. That's where John and I are. We're in New York, and New York, like California, is the tip of the spear, because usually things start in New York and in California, and they meet in the middle. They march across the country. It's been that way for a long, long time. They experiment.
We can make
some
changes here. Hopefully, that will help change.
Oh, if you look at this is where the battle is. This is where if we win, everybody wins. You know what I mean?
Right.
And there are so many good things going on right now. I would, listen, take a deep breath and hold it, because you're gonna see things happening in the next couple of months, because it's at that point, it's at a head, and it's not going
to. I even told you this has to do with my child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough when it's children. There's so many horribly sad stories out there, and look at the forces that are out there that understand this. They understand that too. One of the biggest things that Donald Trump has committed to as he became president was the plight of children, unborn and unborn, and child trafficking and all the horrible things that happen to children in the United States under the guise of law, and how they, child services and all this other crap that goes on that's allowed to happen, it really, their crime is they cry to heaven for vengeance. They're the ones that upset God the most. It's like, I think what's happened is, God will put up with a lot of stuff, but when you scratch at his eyeball, you know what happens when you scratch at somebody's eyeball? Their hand comes up and swats you away from their face. So I think the hand is already in motion. They just don't know it yet. You know what I'm saying? So just I'm going to say persevere and do what you can. Even if you got to stall, because you got to know how to use good stall tactics, that's also a strategy in court. So
court dropped it. Court has nothing to do with it anymore. I intimidated them so much, not by my own knowledge, but by what God showed me and just what
So who, if the court dropped it, who are you fighting?
The court CPS decided they were just going to take my son out of the foster home. They swapped him in and give him to the father he didn't even know, my former husband, that just had not had anything to do with him and had a criminal history. And now that man, my former husband, won't even let me see him. And there was no crime. I did nothing wrong. I just didn't send my son to school after he got home from the hospital. And my ex hired people to make false allegations, and nothing was ever.
It's tough when you're fighting another spouse, and what happens is that's what empowers them, because they feel like they have a complaining party that they can get behind. And I don't, the only thing you can do is hold them all personally responsible, and I don't know in these courts in New York State, that you're going to have much luck in countersuing them, but that's where you got to be. You got to become the plaintiff, and you need to bring it into a federal court. Is, I know that's the advice that John would give you also. I mean, I know that's not easy.
They're looking to the legislature to have them indicted.
Well, the legislature is just as bad. they're worse. And, most of our governors and senators and things like that, they've been compromised. They don't get in there unless that's what Jeffrey Epstein's job was to do, to get them all in there and get the goods on them. Because it's like working for the mob. They're not going to let you in there till you're made man. So they're afraid to do anything lawful or legal, because they already got their marching orders, and they will release whatever it is they're holding over their head if they fine for you. So I have less faith in the legislators than I do in the courts. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's a tough one. And I don't know that I would go there. I mean, I would go anywhere that I had to if it was a child of mine. But I wouldn't depend on I would figure out. You could do simultaneously. You can beg the legislator, but it's like what I think St. Paul said. Why do you go to their courts looking for justice? Because
exactly.
They're corrupt.
They're going back to the crime scene.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're just asking them to give you more hurt. You know what I mean? And I don't want to tell you to break the law or anything. But there's parents kidnap their kids back to save their lives. And as far as I'm concerned, you are taking care of your child. I mean, you got to have a good conscience about it. You know what I mean? I mean,
well,
especially
what would happen if I did, and if I brought.
Well, they would be on the run all the time. You would be on the run, and they would go after you, and you know, you're living a life of crime basically. But you know, look at the early Christians were on the run all the time. The early church was underground. I mean, I'm not telling you to go live underground, but desperate times call for desperate actions. But I don't think that this is going to go on much longer. You know, I think it's going to come to a head pretty quickly. But
there's not even an order. There's no order that says I can't see my son.
Right. So, so that's what you, can you get an official in a court that you can make that charge and go after them? Because if there's not even an order, then what are they operating on? What's their operating authority? They don't have it. So, but you have to hurry. I mean, you can't tarry with this stuff. I don't know. If there's not even an order, then if you do kidnap them and take them, that's your defense. There wasn't an order, and I'm the mother, and so this is a personal matter, a civil matter between the father and me. You know, leave me alone. And look at, if you could get someplace where you can find a constitutional servant, look at, move to Michigan, bring them to Michigan and get him and sit in one of them sheriff's counties. That's what I would do. I mean, I don't know what other advice to give you. I feel for you, and it's terrible, but, you know, if I had to, I'd get out of California, and I'd get my kid out of California. But look, it's getting late. New York. Same difference. So I'm going to move ahead. I hope that I gave you some kind of consolation there. I don't know, but you're up against a very, you know, wicked system, no doubt. And I know other people that had their kids and been decimated by the courts in New York. It's disgusting. I don't even like to talk about it because it makes me sick, you know?
So I guess I would just like to unite with the rest of folks in New York to start making whatever changes
everyone. Look at if something breaks loose in New York where there's some sort of a judge that was put in or something that you could go to, you know, I certainly would forward that information to you. I mean, I haven't heard anything yet, but I know that they're working, you know, in New York quite a bit, especially that Southern District, which has been so corrupt. And I think the funny thing is that the most corrupt area is going to be the first one to get changed, because I think that's where they're concentrating. That's my position that, you know, I mean, especially Trump, he's had to operate out of that Southern District his whole life and his business, and he certainly knows what's going on down there. So, hopefully, you know, it's going to come, they're going to clean those courts out soon, and I'm hoping that, you know, New York is going to be one of the first places. So,
well, can't we take this to one of the jury trials or
Well, listen. The stuff that's going on in Michigan with this governor and these constitutional sheriffs is the type of stuff that will push forward the common law and the common law jury and all that. So, you know, I'm being very, you know, optimistic, so to speak, because of the things that I see now. Time will met that out whether it comes to fruition or not. But it won't be because we're not working on it. So you got to have faith in God and look at, you got to persevere in your prayer, and you know, other than that, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Okay.
So I'd like to put together a common law jury here. So I'll be in touch with all of you then.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. Thanks, Christine. Okay, Linda from West Virginia, go ahead.
This is Linda from Virginia.
Or Virginia, I don't know why you said West
Virginia.
Yeah, Virginia. It's late.
Yes, it is late.
I'm less than a mark tonight.
I actually wanted to ask this question earlier because I feel like there's more people out there, but it's about the Joinder case, which I've been helping on, and there was some things I realized. I guess I'll just go ahead and say it now, but for the benefit of whoever is still out there. But I've kind of, you know, one thing I thought about is who would not do this, you know, because you can still have your own case, whatever that may be. You can still pursue your own case, but you can also join the NLA case.
Absolutely.
And which then gets you into a federal court. And the benefit of that is that most people cannot navigate a federal court, you know, on their own. And the other side of it is they can't afford to get somebody to do that.
There's a lot of attorneys that don't want to go to federal court. I mean, it takes special.
Look, bear in mind, you can never get a bar attorney, and that's mostly what you'll find out there. You'll never get a bar attorney that will represent you in a federal court. They will go according to the rules. The problem is you've got to go against the rules because that has nothing to do with you. And actually, there's not that much that you really need to know and understand about the federal courts, but the things that you do have to know and understand about the federal courts, you can't miss anything, and you have to have the right mindset. And if you got an understanding, and it really gets down to cause, you know, you move a case to federal court for cause, or you take a case that you've been brought into federal court and you move it over into a court of record by denying them any kind of a jurisdiction over you. And if you do all those things properly, that judge does understand. Because anybody that understands what you're talking about, federal judges know. They're highly educated individuals. And they know both sides of the game, and they got to know it in order to maintain the status quo for the deep state and for ultimately the New World Order. In order for them to maintain that, they must understand exactly what's going on. So they're very sophisticated. And if you get a good enough understanding of how the process works and you lay it out and exercise the things that you need to, which, again, is not a lot, but you will not. It'll cost you $10,000, $20,000 just to get a lawyer to go into federal court, number one, and he's not going to win your case, number two, because you're going up against the status quo.
Yeah, I think it's a $30,000 retainer from what
I've seen. Yeah, something like that.
And so if you can find a lawyer. You can't find one that will take you.
And you don't want a lawyer in a common law court unless you got a common law lawyer. And that's hard and far and in between to find. You're not going to find many of them. You know,
we have one that
works with us and teaches with us all the time, Brent Winters, so...
Well, that's back to what I say. Who wouldn't join this case? Who wouldn't, you know? And, you know, if I was to go out there and file a federal case myself, first thing I'm going to do is have to pay $400 to file the case. And just to have happen what you just explained, you know? Mm-hmm. And the third thing I was thinking of is that, you've talked about it a lot, and that's that these courts are very comfortable in their environment. They say jump and everybody jumps, you know, and nobody holds them accountable. Nobody challenges them. And so they just have free reign over that court. There's no one they have to answer to. Whereas if it goes to federal court, you know, all of a sudden it's a different ball game because they're answering to another court and they have another court, you know, looking at what they're doing. So that's another aspect of it. And
yeah,
then
I
the fourth
also
thing
heard that I think it was Thornton that said this is sometimes you can count on a federal judge to rule for you because there's a certain jealousy between them and they like to assert their authority over them. And so that gives you, like you just said, it gives you a little leg up in that court. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Well, then the last thing is that if you have something happening, your kids have taken property, money, I don't know what else, but anything taken really, that you really need to hit them from all sides. I was working with a lady in California, and she had a case in Superior Court and in the state court. I don't know. She had two cases going at the same time, which was just craziness. And so to me, this is so beneficial because you can have your own case, but you can also file this case And when you join the case, you're not really having to do a lot, you know, in the case. You fill out an intake form and then you join the case and everything is, I don't know all the particulars of it, okay, but, you know, a lot of it is already done. So
yeah, we do all the paperwork for you, and we assist you with writing an affidavit, and then at the end of the day, we write a decision and order, and we even go further than that when there's disobedience, especially from a federal judge, but it could be from any judge. We give them one other warning. We may find them in contempt, but the next step after that is an indictment, and we are indicting lots of judges. We have been for quite some time. We probably have 60 or 70 judges that we've indicted already, and that's a guess. I never keep count of those things. We got a lot, and we're adding them all the time. You know, we got lots of cases.
I've heard several people talk tonight, and I was like, why don't they join the NLA case? You know, but the thing I mentioned about taking it out of their sandbox, that can really make a difference. I know in my own case, you know, I was just given information to go see some people who had authority over the people that I was dealing with. And when I went there and I told them the story, and it involved a judge and an unethical contractor and all this, I really believe that the public official got scared about this becoming, you know, not disclosed, and that he, because I know when I left there, he said, well, they work for me, you know, and he said, I'll take care of this.
Yeah, and a lot of times when you go up to that official, that's exactly what they do, because they don't need the headache. They'll call the guy and say, look, cut your crap out, because it's going to end up making him look bad. A lot of times they'll do that just to put the fire out, especially if they think firecracker, you're going to make noise, you know. But go ahead.
But it was the course of least resistance, because they had recommended me to call this person, and he recommended me to call somebody else. And I got off the phone and I said, that's not going to work. But I did it anyway, because I wanted to make sure I was covering all bases, you know, and doing everything I could do within my power to do. So, you know, I think with this taking it out of their sandbox, you know, they may just go ahead and settle, as opposed to not having to go through that whole, you know, process or whatever. So,
well, to distill it down, I'll say the squeaky wheel gets the grease. If you don't squeak, you can't get greased. So by doing what you're saying and taking that one extra step, whether you think it's going to work or not, you're making more noise, and somebody may hear, you know, and again, you hit the right chord, and somebody doesn't want this bad reputation on them, or whatever may be the reason. And like you said, sometimes they'll acquiesce just to get rid of the headache. You're absolutely right. And we've seen that. Yeah. We've seen that with some of our people, too. So, anyway,
yeah, those were my thoughts, and I would just sum it up and just say, I don't know why everyone is not joining this case, to tell you the truth. I mean, it doesn't take that much to do, and, you know, could be the thing that changes the whole trajectory of these people. I've talked to people, they've spent, I don't know how much money, one I talked to spent close to $10,000 already, you know, trying to go through these courts and get justice. And
they're going to lose, too.
Right.
Yeah, and they're just draining. They're draining these people. And also, I think they prey on their emotions. They get people that like to, you know, that are kind of like fighters. And then the people are in it. And what John says is so true about, do you want to fight or do you want to win?
Right.
Because some people get in there and they just get in the fight. And they just keep wanting to fight, you know.
Yeah, well,
they like lose all
gotta,
fight.
That's where you got to hit where it counts and forget the other issues. And you're right. A lot of people just want to tell their story and fight, and it's really, they're really not doing their case any good. Maybe it's making them feel better that they can, you know, complain about it, so to speak. But
They make them lose sight of what their goal was to start with, you know.
Right.
So anyway, that's what I had to say. I have another issue, but I'll call it another time,
yeah,
I guess.
It's late and we're over time. I just want to get Ed from Arizona has been in the queue forever, and I'm going to unmute him as the last guy. Thanks a lot, Linda. Yeah. Okay, Ed, you've been unmuted.
Why, I thank you, John and Gerard.
Yeah.
I have a question about the remedy in a case where a house has been taken. Do you have a template for that that we could work from?
Yeah, we can help. Did they take it away ready from you?
You have it. It's been in the files and our friend.
Did we move it into federal court, or was this something we did early on?
Early on.
Okay, yeah. Go talk to Jim and talk to him about moving it into federal court for cause, because early on we didn't have the understanding to be able to move it into federal court. We didn't come to an appreciation of that yet.
Yeah, we've been in this situation for some time, and Judge Wright has received his thing and ignored it.
All right. Well, talk to Jim, and go through things with him. And then when I talk to Jim, he'll explain to me what's going on, where we're at, and we'll see what we can do further.
Okay. The other thing, Gerard and John, I have the greatest respect for your knowledge of common law, and I've been with you for quite some time, and I have very seldom heard you say anything I didn't agree with. Tonight you ran into an area that I think is not your forte. We have space visitors visiting the Earth from other star systems. They did not come by rocket power. We have, the elite have the knowledge of how to do this. It does not require days and days and days or months to get to Mars.
Oh,
we
I don't
have
doubt
people.
Any of that. Look, I don't doubt that there's things that they know that they're holding back and how to wrinkle time or whatever, you know what I mean? I mean, I have an open mind to those things because, you know, look, God is great and understanding these things, you know, it's stuff that we're going to understand at some point anyway, you know?
Yeah, in my father's house there are many mansions.
Right,
and
exactly.
That many worlds.
Right,
but,
I wouldn't argue with you about, you know, all that. You know, I mean, I'm careful with it because, you know, because I don't know that much about it, so I'm not gonna pretend like I do, you know.
Yeah. We do have people living on, humans from Earth living on Mars, and so it's already a thing done. Not
well,
a question of whether
I
it can be done.
I wish we could send a lot more people there. to me, to go live on Mars is like living under the ocean, only worse. I mean, I'm not saying that wouldn't be adventurous, but it's certainly, to me, it's not as nice as living up on top of the Earth. I mean, look, there's terrible pressures down there, and you got to have special stuff and blah, blah. Look, when I want to go out, I go out in my bubble, which is like the water, but I can function with my lungs, and I don't have to worry about special equipment and all, you know, and having something breached. And, you know, maybe if you had real good technology, I just wonder how easy their life really is doing, you know what I mean? I mean, I understand, you know, in the experimentation and the adventure, you know, that there was a time in my life when I would have went, yeah, let me go. Not now. I'm perfectly happy where I am, you know what I mean? But that's my own.
And I do appreciate the fact that, you know, I don't know too much about it, but, you know, that's not where my forte is. But I'm very interested in the science and looking at the different sciences, watching as many documentaries as possible, and listening to conversations by scientists and things of that nature. Lots of stuff on, YouTube and Hulu and all the other ones that you can get to through Roku.
And eyes have not seen, or ears have not heard.
Yeah, but with that said, I have heard the things that you're talking about, but I haven't been convinced of that. I'm not going to deny it. I do believe. I'm very surprised because looking into science, especially the past 5 years or so, and I've been interested in it for longer than that, but particularly I've been really focusing a lot in on it, and looking into science and things and trying to understand what I can understand about it, I'm pretty confident to say that there probably is a way to be able to travel from one star system to another star system, sort of in subspace or something of that nature. I mean, even traveling at the speed of light, it still takes you, the closest star will take us, what, 6 years? I think it's 6 light years away, so 6 years at the speed of light. Then there's a time problem with that, you know, how old are you going to be when you get there and get back, if you can get back, and all that other stuff, and if you survive the trip, and, you know, again, if there's something that you can't bypass it somehow by going into, let's call it subspace, for lack of a better word, and again, I think that possibility might be there. I'm very surprised. And I'm a Bible student for quite some time, over 30, maybe 40 years, quite a few years. And I already knew about a lot of things that science has already discovered because the Bible has already expressed it already. You know, this idea of going down to the lowest form where you get a vibration string theory, which I kind of agree with, at least the understanding of it, it's just really a vibration or a sound. Well, God's clear in the Bible. He spoke. That's a vibration. That's a word. You know, let there be light, and pow, there was light. So he created things by a vibration, by a word, and he created all things in that way, in that sense. The other thing is back in the turn of the century, coming into the 20th century, where they realized that, okay, you know, the Big Bang Theory, and one guy that's been pushing it quite hard, I think he was a priest, as a matter of fact, and he called it that the universe was born. And boy, they fought that tooth and nail against that idea. But they came around quite quickly with the Big Bang, which means exactly the same thing. The universe was born. It had a point in time when it started. And that's when God said, let there be light.
And
the expansion
Tesla?
Of the universe. Huh?
What about Tesla? And he died broke, but his ideas are just being realized now. Tesla, you know.
Yep. And the expansion of the universe in itself, all of a sudden recently, I don't know, maybe recently is 5-10 years, I don't know, but recently they're talking now that the universe expanded faster than light, and then they say, well, nothing can move faster than light, and they come up with an answer, well, that's through space. When space and light and everything was created, there was no speed limit. And again, that's instantaneous, potentially, which, again, God spoke everything instantaneously into being. God didn't put this thing into gear to go and sit around tapping his foot, looking at his watch or something, waiting, you know, 10 billion years until, okay, now it's time to raise mankind. I mean, that's an absurd idea, of course, but that's kind of the way they're thinking of it. And the Bible is clear again where it says that, the world was created with an apparent age.
John and Gervard, I reiterate that I have great respect for your knowledge of the law, mm-hmm. But you're out of bounds when you start talking science.
Well, I agree with you. I will not debate that argument because you're right. I'm a beginner on those things.
But I
am a Bible student, and I think I've got a lot of knowledge of the Bible, and what science has confirmed as certain things that they're pretty believe is probably the case. They don't really know 100%. The Bible does clarify certain things.
I have no problem with the Bible. I started studying the Bible before you were even thought of.
Well, there you go.
Well, now, based on that, that's a good line to end with here tonight.
Amen.
We appreciate it. Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you back here next Monday, same time, same station. God bless.